Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening and or good morning wherever you may be across this great land of ours and well beyond. To the Rock, the island of Guam in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to Santa Country at the pole, and worldwide on ye olde internet, this is Coast to Coast AM and I'm Art Bell. Hello there. Hello there, KAOK, brand new affiliate in Lake Charles, Louisiana, 101.7 megahertz on the FM dial there. Lake Charles, FM, huh? KAOK, Lake Charles, Louisiana. Welcome to the network as we streak our way toward 500 affiliates. Listen, we're doing pre-feeds every night. I stress that, and every night it's true. Beginning 3 hours before the live program, i.e. now, we do pre-feeds, the last 3 hours of the program from the previous night. And I know that a lot of you get involved in the program, and then your little eyes begin to close because you have to go to work or something. And you miss it. So radio stations are capable of picking up 3 hours of the previous night if they find themselves with a need for good programming prior to this hour. Well, California did it. As protesters jeered, hell no, we won't pay. Oh, yes, you will. California regulators approved electricity rate increases up to 46% Tuesday to head off blackouts this summer and keep the state's two biggest utilities from going under. Oh, but technology never fails, does it? Right? Technology, we can depend on that. The increases approved 5-0, no dissenters, by the PUC, are the biggest in California history and take effect immediately for the 25 million people served by Pacific Gas and Electric Company and Southern California Edison. Would you be on one of those? Probably. The commission president, Loretta Lynch, said, the PUC has done all it can. We fought back hard in every venue possible against these unjustly energy prices. Unjustly high, I guess it would be. PUC also ordered the utilities to pay the state for billions of dollars of electricity it has bought on behalf of their customers. Just how much is not known. The state has not disclosed how much it has spent to keep all of you power-hungry Californians satiated, satisfied. Anyway, so they've done it, and there will be a provision to force electricity hogs. Are you a hog? I wonder where they define hoggishness when it comes to electricity. If your bill is over $50 a month, are you a hog? If it's over 100, are you a hog? What about, well, 300? You'd probably be a hog, wouldn't you? And you know at 500, you're doing something wrong. Oink. So, they went and did it. Congratulations, California. And now, for anybody smugly sitting out there saying, well, I'm not in California, let them rot in hell out there. Anything done in California is going to make its way across the United States. You can depend on that. So your meter, too, will take on a life of its own. By the way, we were talking about the blurring of meters, and I noticed CNN, when they're doing the story on California's rate increase, they show this meter. The dials are going around and around and around real fast. So there'll be no more blackouts, right? Technology never fails. Well, once in a while it does. Listen to this. Do you remember our guest last night talking about a nuclear failure that we hadn't heard about at San Onofre? Remember that? Well, now just look at this. From the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, a significant accident February 3rd at Southern California's San Onofre No. 3 nuclear power reactor is a major cause of the rolling blackouts that have plagued California this week. Would you listen to this? According to published reports, California has lacked up to 800 megawatts of power during the blackout periods. When running at full power, Saturn Ophir A3 produces 1,120 megawatts of electricity. Had the reactor been operating, the blackouts almost certainly would not have occurred. The accident occurred when a circuit breaker caused a fire that lasted, get this, nearly 3 hours. A loss of off-site power and a reactor scram. A related failure of an oil pump resulted in extensive damage to the plant's turbine. The reactor is expected to be shut down for repairs for at least 3 months. Although the utility claims no radiation was released, no nuclear safety issues involved, the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission sent a special inspection team to that plant to investigate the accident. The NRC met with the SCE officials today to go over their findings. The team's report is expected to be publicly released soon. Quote, "This is a serious accident," end quote, which has gone virtually unnoticed in the daily attention given to California's electricity problems. Well, 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 well. Isn't that interesting? But, of course, technology never fails, right? Sounds pretty serious. Pretty serious, I would say, wouldn't you? Considering it didn't get any publicity and you probably had to hear it here. Just verification of what my guest said last night. And then there's this. Remember last night I told you about some sort of massive electromagnetic something up in Washington? Do you remember? It ended as suddenly and mysteriously as it had begun. The mass failure of keyless remote entry devices on thousands of vehicles in the Bremerton Port Orchard area ended abruptly at about 6:30 a.m. Monday as federal investigators had nearly isolated the source. A government official familiar with the investigation by the Federal Communications Commission said it is, quote, "very possible," end quote, that the problem could be related to the military presence in the Bremerton area. The official, who asked not to be identified, said the abrupt disappearance of the interference could be related to the investigation. The outage was believed to be caused by some kind of rogue signal from electronic communications gear that interfered with the functioning of the popular keyless remote entries. So, pretty interesting, huh? Sure is interesting to me, considering the massive electronic failure of electromagnetic pulse, whatever it was that we had here, and I guarantee you, we had something of that exact same nature. Now, what do you suppose our military is out there doing anyway? These very specific areas, Pahrump, Nevada, Bremerton, Washington. How would you cause such a massive failure over such a large but yet actually geographically confined area? Such a specific area, you cause all electromagnetic stuff to begin to stop working. How do you do that? Well, I suspect that our military knows. Don't you? So, the Federal Communications Commission hiked on up there, and it got very close to the source of the trouble, but didn't quite get there because, can you imagine this? Just as the FCC is closing in on the source of the mystery, it quits. Listen to this. Dear Art, I work as a correctional officer at the Calum Bay Correctional Center. At 22:55 hours, or 10:55 p.m. on Friday, March 1st, we suddenly had sporadic power failures in the automatic lock systems in our CMU facility, medium security, and rumor has it elsewhere. The systems are on a separate power grid with generator backup. In addition, several portable radios carried by our officers suddenly lost all power and were drained completely. As if this was not enough, at least one CO's watch stopped dead at 22:55. This is due to the same EMP blast that affected Bremerton. Now, the interesting part of all this is the sporadic effects of the EMP blast that hit so many systems in our facility while at the same time not affecting others. For some reference, Calum Bay is on the northwestern corner of the Olympic Peninsula, nearly 100 miles away. No power disruptions reported in any of the cities between here and Bremerton. And by the way, he's got a friend on the USS Carl Vincent, and his friend reported nothing at all unusual. The friend is an RF specialist in the communications area on that. Well, of course, he might not know. And I'm certainly not saying that that boat did it. But I am saying that something really, really, really weird is going on. Really weird. And it happened here, and it happened in Bremerton. And even our good Federal Communications Commission actually tracking it down, just as they get there, it stops. Just as they get near it, or very close, it abruptly quits. Kind of like the HARP, only it wasn't HARP signal on 3.39. Oh, what a world we live in today.
December 7th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right. I've got new stuff for you on the website. Oh, my, do I have some new stuff for you on the website. As usual, literally, well, I'll say 10 minutes before airtime tonight. And you know why this always happens? It happens because that's when I go through my last batch of email. I'm downloading email all day long. I get a good 1,500 to 2,000 emails a day. Well, the last batch I try and download just before airtime. And somebody has sent a photograph of, well, it's in Germany, and it reads, my friend Jonathan just got back from a tour of Europe. This photo was taken at a winery in Germany, in the Moselle Valley, is that it? That's M-O-S-E-L-L-E. Are they possibly ghosts? Many of his friends commented when they saw this photo, as I did, photo taken with ASA 400 Kodak film, 35mm, it's genuine photo. I'd like to know your opinion. What is it? What are they? And it shows this building in Germany, and I swear to you, this reminds me so much of Ghostbusters, it's not even funny. The building kind of looks like the Ghostbusters thing when they were at one of these old buildings. And it's a really old building. Church, actually, I guess. And take a look at what's coming out of the building. Just like in Ghostbusters, there's something coming out. That's a winery. Looks like a church, though. Looks exactly like a church. But it, in fact, is, of course, a winery. And a very old one. And there is something drifting out of this building. Everybody that I've shown this to, two people, my wife, Ramona, and Keith, both said, wow, that's kind of interesting. So take a look. You go to my website. Let's see. How do you see it? Go to my website, www.artbell.com. Then you click on the What's New button on the left, and Germany and Pyrotechnic Ghost. That's another one. And a bunch of other stuff up there. But the German photo I really want you to see. This really could be straight out of Ghostbusters. Straight out of Ghostbusters. Are Americans sleep-deprived workaholics with only about a third sleeping the recommended 8 hours a day, and about 40% say they have trouble staying awake on the job, according to a poll released yesterday? The answer is yes. You are all sleep-deprived workaholics. That's Associated Press story. The person who sent this to me accused me of being one of the reasons. Sleep-deprived workaholics. And then this. Although Americans do not appear to be shunning meat, many seem to be confusing foot-and-mouth disease with a much rarer and more dangerous mad cow disease. Sure, I bet that's right. Foot-and-mouth is harmless to people, but mad cow can be a fatal human brain condition. And people do need to understand the difference. But I guess with the barrage of news they're getting on hoof and mouth from Europe and mad cow, and then, you know, the thing in the back of their mind, they only half hear the news, most Americans anyway, about the sheep, you know, then I guess they're starting to freak out and not think real hard about it. I think that's called panic, right? Unknown object streaks across the night sky. Something lit up the night sky off the Southern California coast late Monday, but nobody can say for sure what it was. Initial reports were that a possible mid-air collision had occurred less than a mile out to sea from San Pedro, but thorough search of the area by the Coast Guard, sea vessels, and infrared-equipped aircraft turned up nothing. According to a local newswire, witnesses reported a brief flash near Angel's Gate at the breach in the breakwater leading into the port of Los Angeles shortly before 8:30 p.m. Dispatcher for the Coast Guard said, we got reports of the same thing from San Luis Obispo to San Diego, all up and down the coast. A dock worker in San Pedro told authorities he thought he had seen two airplanes collide. Los Angeles Fire Department spokesman said it turned out that it was possibly some type of meteorite. I don't mean to laugh, but, you know, pull this story apart a little bit and look at it. You've got two objects coming together in a manner that caused people who viewed it to believe that two aircraft had just collided. It's seen up and down the coast, but in the end, they always say some kind of meteorite. How the hell do they know? They have no idea. Unless you actually get the rock, the meteorite, and hold it in your hand after it's cooled sufficiently, because it's going to be real hot when it gets down, unless you've got something like that, then I don't see how you could possibly say some kind of meteorite with reports like this. But inevitably, that is exactly the way all of these stories end. It drives me insane. Maybe meteorite is among the possible choices to explain what this might have been. But it certainly isn't the only explanation, is it? What do you think the odds are of meteorites coming in at different angles from space, heating up, turning into flaming objects that meteorites become, and then colliding in our atmosphere during the burn? Well, I'd whole lot rather try the California lottery than I would believe that. But that typically is this sort of story. All right, faucets in central Florida are going to run dry unless some heavy rains get happening pretty quickly. There was a meeting Friday of the National Emergency Response leaders discussing how to keep the water flowing in face of what they're calling the state's worst drought in history. In history. So, again, obviously, The weather is going south on us, the worst drought in the state's history. Joe Albaugh, director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, met with the Florida Governor Jeb Bush to try and decide what to do if conditions don't improve. So they're literally saying that if conditions do not improve, you may, if you're in Florida, that part of Florida, you may turn on your faucets and nothing might come out. Oh, but not to worry because technology never fails, right? I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
Girl, just hold in my arms and know the magic of her charms. 'Cause I want, girl, to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Dream lover, where are you? With a love oh so true.
Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
There is never, ever going to be another group like ABBA. The power. The harmony. All of it. There's never going to be another ABBA. My guest tonight, Matthew Stein. And he has written a book called When Technology Fails, The Low-Tech Guide to Self-Reliance and Planetary Survival. So, we'll talk to Matthew about when technology does fail, because obviously it does fail, doesn't it? Be right back.
March 27th, 2001. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right. Into the dark night of unscreen calls we go. Anything that's on your mind is going to be fair game. And there could be a lot on your mind. Boy, there has been so much going on, hasn't there? So it should be interesting hearing what we do, and that is what he's going to tell us, by the way, what we do when technology fails. But it never fails. Wild card line, you're on the air.
All right, gotcha. It's Kathy from Woodbridge. Hello. Probably thought I passed away.
Kathy, it has been at least
a year. We're in New York.
Yep.
The book signing.
Yes.
I'm glad your alien arrived safely to you.
Did you see a picture of him?
I did. I went to a friend's house today and got got in and got to see it. And it, what is it made out of?
Well, it's made out of hard wood.
That's what I thought it was.
And it weighs a ton. And its name is Carvel. And, you know, several people wrote to me and said they thought that Rush named it Carvel because of James Carvel. And they sent pictures of James Carvel. And actually, when you look at James Carvel,
he
resembles an alien.
Yes, he does.
I mean, not entirely an alien, just pretty alien.
Well, let me not take too much of your time, and let me make sure I give you some information.
All right.
Did you see a commercial for Christina Applegate's new movie?
No.
Okay, you're going to be very interested in it. She talked about this a year ago in Regis, and I never got to tell you. The movie's called Just Visiting. And it is about time travel.
I
say nothing more. I shouldn't give away any more. But you're going to love it. See if you can get her on. Maybe she'll talk.
I've always wanted to interview her anyway.
Now, there's something. I think she was sending a signal to you from Regis that last year because the only thing she would tell Regis is the movie wasn't done and it was about time travel.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't interested at all. But
it's funny. I heard Meg Ryan just did one about time travel.
Yeah.
That's true also?
Yes. Yeah, but it's
so we've got all kinds of time travel movies.
It's going to be great. And I just rented a movie, and it's cool. It was called Red Planet.
Oh, yes.
This is not one for Mr. Golden. He's not going to like this movie.
I know.
And, you know, Phil, you'll see it if you didn't see it already. But Richard isn't going to like it too much either. But
well, you can't please all people all the time.
Well, I found it quite interesting.
Well, I'll take a look. I haven't seen it yet.
One quick thing. I want to give myself kudos. Wednesday before New Year's Eve, they did a prediction show on ABC. One of my predictions was the snow that weekend, some earthquakes, and a little cute one about Art Bell coming back in March. I was off by, I guess, a month.
did you really predict
yes,
that?
Yes, I did. And it's in the archives.
Okay.
You can find them.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Yep.
Bye-bye, Art.
Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Where are you?
I'm calling from Providence, Rhode Island.
Yes.
I wanted to tell you that time travel does work.
Well, how do you know?
I think I did it. Well, I didn't do it, but I went for the ride.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, two friends of mine, they go to a local college, and what they did was they took three generators.
Right.
And they synchronized it with some kind of magnetic field.
Right.
And I didn't believe them. And I said, this will never work.
Well, you could use generators to power a magnetic field.
I don't know how they did it.
All right, so anyway, these three friends had generators, were generating a magnetic field, and what?
Well, according to them, I disappeared.
You disappeared?
Yes, I was the guinea pig.
All right, for you. How did they get you to volunteer?
I didn't believe them. I thought they were nuts. I thought they were crazy. I thought they were out of their mind.
And so...
I said, okay,
so,
sure.
Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You think they're out of their minds, they're crazy, and you're going to stand in the middle of... It's like, here, Frank, hold these two wires. Duh.
Well, no.
Isn't it a little like that? I mean, here you go strolling into the middle. You think they're out of their minds. They say, stand over there, right?
Well, yeah, sort of. I had to sit in
all right.
In a triangulated, I don't know, like a...
What?
It's sort of like diamond-shaped telephone booth.
A diamond-shaped telephone booth. Who are these three friends of yours, anyway?
Well, you know what? I'd rather not say no.
Do they want to talk?
Well, I asked them. I said, I'm going to go public with this. And they didn't really... say anything after that. They were really, really kind of worried now.
They're worried that you were going to, for
example... Well, no, they were worried that it worked.
No, but I mean about your going public.
Well, in a way, yes.
So they know you're doing this. And they obviously haven't killed you to stop you.
No, I don't think so. But it was really interesting.
Well, you've got real cojones. I wouldn't, you know, if I thought somebody was crazy and I saw a big electrical apparatus and generators and an electromagnetic field, no doubt wound wire like crazy and
to be honest
big
with you,
mechanism, and they'd say, sit there, and you sat there?
It didn't look that bad. They did a test run.
Yeah.
And I didn't see anything happen, and I just heard a little bit of noise, some humming. And
it's like when you take an MRI, you'll hear a little humming.
Yeah, something like that, I suppose. But and according to what they say, is I disappeared, and then I showed up in a forest somewhere. I don't know where. I can't tell you where. I have no idea.
Wait a minute. They say you showed up in a forest,
no.
Or you're saying you showed up in a forest?
I'm saying I showed up
in a forest.
All
right, so then here's the way it went. One second, you were in the triangle, and the next second, you were in a forest.
That's correct.
Oh, where was this forest?
I don't know.
Oh, so in other words, you popped back.
Yes, then I came back.
How much were you able to see? You say you were in a forest. You were just, boom, suddenly there and then gone? Or were you there to study
there
it a little bit, or what?
Maybe approximately, I don't know, a minute, 2 minutes maybe.
Oh, that's a lot of time. So you must have been just sort of standing there going, bam, a forest.
Yeah, it was speechless. Words can't describe. You don't believe what you're going to do, and then all of a sudden you take off. And you wind up somewhere else in the blink of an eye.
You're like that kid on the commercial that'll eat anything. I forget his name. Mikey.
Okay.
But I would really like to talk to your friends.
All right, maybe I can have them call you.
Why don't you have a chat with them and put it this way to them. Look, I blew the whole story wide open on Art Bell's show. And he'd like to interview you and find out what you did to Mikey.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
All right. You contact me by email, artbell@mindspring.com. And I promise you, if you send me an email, title it Time Travel, I'll read it and contact you and contact them, and we'll get the rest of the story.
Very good.
All right. Thank you very much. Wow. What are we on to here? In New England yet? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to talk with Art Bell if I could.
You could. You are.
Oh, this is Art?
Yes.
Hi, Art. I've got a couple things I want to tell you about HAARP.
Okay.
First thing is, this. You mentioned something the other night about you didn't understand why Boeing was leaving Seattle.
Seattle, yes.
Yeah, well, there's about five or six reasons why that could be. And I can give them to you if you want, but you probably know most of them. The cost of doing business in this state is terribly high, almost more than any other state, I think. The union is out of control here on wages and so forth.
Mm.
And transportation is absolutely awful. They can't transport their...
You know, let me tell you something that I don't understand about this. It was only a year or two ago that major magazines were naming Seattle as one of the best places in the United States that anybody could live in.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So I guess you don't want to get named the best place.
Well, all these things are absolutely happening. They can't do business here and transport their goods from Renton area up to Everett area. There's just no way that it takes an hour to get anywhere around here.
Mm.
The drought.
Well, I've got one for you.
What's that?
I'm going to have Nick Begich on the air for a whole show next week. Yeah. There's so much going on with electromagnetic, I think, my wife thinks, weapons.
Oh, you got it down because it's exactly what I was going to tell you.
I think we're weapons testing, don't you?
That's exactly what's going here. I was going to tell you in the Seattle Times, I got some articles here in front of me that says, as an example, in today's paper, it says that Boeing is trying to get a contract for $320 billion for what they're calling a joint strike fighter. That's all a bunch of bull. It's HAARP right down the line.
Well, these electromagnetic pulses are pretty weird. Thank you very much. And, I don't know, Boeing, Could they be involved in something like that? What is it they say about animals? They never poop where they eat, right? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning to you.
This is Jim in East Tennessee.
Yes, Jim.
My question is... And incidentally, oh, welcome back.
Thank you.
Do you have a scheduled visit yet by Bonnie Crystal?
Not yet.
not yet.
But we will. Bonnie is really, really busy right now.
Oh, I want to hear more descriptions of her trips down deep below the surface of the earth.
Well, she's been toiling with a lab coat on real hard every day, all day, late into the night. So when she gets a little free of work, we'll do it.
She'll have a lot to report.
Yes, she will. Thank you very much. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. Jason Crump.
Yes, Jason.
How you doing?
I'm doing.
You're doing?
I'm doing.
It's good to have you back, partner.
Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to get an update on the canine.
You mean K-N-Y-E?
Yes, sir.
All right, coming up, Jason. Listen on the air. Jason would be interested in that because he lives here in Pahrump. Well, let's see. What is the update? We have the construction permit. We're putting up an FM station here in Pahrump, Nevada. And we have the construction permit to do so. We are presently seeking a tower modification, simple little thing from the Federal Communications Commission. And as soon as we get that, we will begin actual physical construction of KNYE. KNYE even has a sit-in-place website. Nothing on it, but we've got a cute little website there. It's KNYE.com. So, that's the update. It should be quick. We get this tower modification thing, and away we go. And oh, there is this. It's going to be all talk. We thought really hard about that, and there is really a good oldies station here where I live now. And they can be heard for, I don't know, hundreds of miles in each direction. I mean, they're awesome. 93.1 here. And so there's no point in competing with them. They're doing it the right way now. It's one of the best I've ever heard. So instead, we're going to do the obvious. We're going to make it a talk station. And have Rush and Laura, myself, scattered others. You never know all kinds of things, but it's going to be a talk station. I guess in the end, how could it have been anything else? So that's your update. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how you doing, Mr. Bell?
Doing
Radio's
just
fine. Off.
Where are you?
I'm in Sacramento, California.
All right.
The energy deprived. So many things. The fireballs that you see are spectral analysis experiments. They started with the extraterrestrials, and then, of course, our government picks them up.
Now, how would you know that?
I've been abducted since I was 7. And
how old are you now?
39.
How many times a year?
I have no idea.
Give me an average.
Probably once a week.
Once? Oh, 52 times a year for all those years? Wow.
Maybe even more than that, actually.
It's like living there and living here so much.
Well, you don't really notice it the way they do it. Basically, what they do is they come in and do a backup of your brain. So you don't even really know what's happening. It's just kind of...
You mean like you'd back up a hard drive on a computer, they back up your brain?
Exactly.
And wow! What a concept. That's some concept when you think about it. They download your brain.
Right. You know, they watch you from afar, and they have no problem doing that. And then they want to see what you're thinking as you're going through your daily routine. We're just little lab rats.
Can you imagine after they've done that how long it would take to defrag?
believe me. But I also want to say it's an honor and a pleasure. I've been listening to you. Even when you were off the air, I still would remember what you said, and I'm a fellow radio disc jockey myself here. Only on cable radio, but that's another story. Interesting. You've heard of feng shui before, correct?
Yes.
Okay. My dad recently passed away in December, and so I moved into the house, and I've been fixing it up, and it was total chaos when I moved in. And one of the things I did is I went around, and I blessed and absorbed all the negative energy, and I was going to flush it down the toilet, right?
The energy?
Pardon me?
The energy?
Yes. All the negative energy. I just collected it.
Like a dead goldfish, huh?
Pretty much, and boom, right? Guess what? It clogs up. I had to pay $100, but I felt so much better after they came in.
Oh, the energy clogged up your drain?
Yeah. I got the receipt right here from what is it, rapid rooter patrol or drain patrol or whatever it is?
Yes, one of those. Yeah.
Drain patrol.
And so you had to call the drain busters.
Yeah.
And when they came in, they cut the drain apart and they found the energy, what did they say?
It was just a little ball of roots is what they said was the clog, but, you know, I mean...
Well, that's more like a hairball.
With a 4-inch line and a ball of roots that would have fit inside a large thimble.
Well, are you sure in your mind now that when you flush the energy, that's the exact time that the clog occurred?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've been here 4 months. And it's the first time...
Once you gathered up the bad energy from the house...
Right.
How did you keep it in one place? Energy is so
okay. I transferred it into my urine. In fact, I didn't want to go that far, but anyway, I transferred it into my urine. I've been drinking coffee all morning.
I thought,
okay, this is it. I'll do this, and then I went into the bathroom and took a leak.
So you should say then you eliminated the energy.
Right. I trapped it and then eliminated it through toilet. And when I flushed, it didn't flush. And so...
And that's all that was in there. I mean, you didn't put anything else?
Nope. Uh-huh. Nothing different. Same thing I've been doing for 4 months. Mm. And I had to call Roto-Rooter. I spent all day, all night last night, and all day today until about 2 o'clock, plunging and sticking things in there and trying to get it to drain and everything you could imagine, and nothing was working, so... They came in and spent about an hour with their big snake.
Yeah, you had to call the pros.
Yeah.
But again, they found something more approximating, a hairball.
Pretty much. About that size. I do have long hair, but believe me, it wasn't a hairball. But anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting. The other thing is, as for the...
There's more?
Well, the political crisis here, or the electrical crisis here in California.
Yes.
Okay. It's all a big scam, and we all know this, and they're going to try to blame it on computers before it's all done. But one thing, with electric vehicles, you know, remember Tesla's sending electricity right via the airwaves?
Through the air, yes.
Okay,
so
what you do is you use an amplified AM signal, and you use a modified speaker that bounces a piston that's actually a coil that runs a generator in your electric vehicle. So basically what you have is little solar-powered AM transfer stations that send out a pulse.
You know what? I'm thinking on one of my open line shows pretty soon, I'm going to do a mad scientist night.
I'd love it.
You would really qualify. So call me, all right?
I absolutely will.
All right. Take care. Technology never fails, right? Wrong. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Stay right where you are. Assume the position.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
Everywhere the heart is, everywhere the day.
Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 27th, 2001.
Good morning, everybody. Well, my guest coming up in a moment is going to be Matthew Stein, who wrote When Technology Fails, The Low-Tech Guide to Self-Reliance and Planetary Survival. That's coming up, but technology never fails, right? We'll cover a little bit of that, and I'll catch those who are joining this hour up in a moment, and then away we will go when technology fails. Oh, you can depend on it.
The Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, we abruptly stopped going to the moon 30-plus years where we haven't been back. What do you think happened? Why did they just stop?
When the Americans finally did land on the moon, they were actually chased off by extraterrestrials saying, excuse me, what are you doing here? Get off. This is our place. And probably scared the hell out of them. That poses a question. Who are these ETs? And we need to start digging a bit deeper.
Now we take you back to the night of March 27th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right. Matthew Stein, who wrote a book called When Technology Fails, The Low-Tech Guide to Self-Reliance and Planetary Survival. In the book, Matthew offers common sense advice and guidelines on how to prepare and cope with the inevitable disruptions, both natural and man-made, that are occurring and predicted to occur an increase in frequency. Matthew Stein is an advocate of developing sustainable lifestyles, has researched and developed a directory of resources and instructional guides to deal with global and local changes that are affecting food, water, energy, shelter, health, and communications, as well as essential goods and services. The guide provides something for everyone, from parents who want to help their families when disaster strikes, as it seems to do more frequently now, to the go-it-alone survivalist, and then the eco-minded person who wishes to tread more lightly on Mother Earth, whatever the future may hold. That's kind of an outline of the book. And I did want to read this to my audience here in the second hour of the program. The headline is, Remember Bremerton. Remember all the remote keyless devices that stopped working? Headline is, Outages Stop, But Mystery Remains. It ended as suddenly and mysteriously as it began. The mass failure of keyless remote entry devices on thousands of vehicles in the Bremerton Port Orchard area ended abruptly at about 6:30 a.m. Monday as federal investigators, FCC people, had nearly isolated the source. A government official familiar with the investigation by the Federal Communications Commission said it is, quote, very possible, end quote, that the problem could be related to the military presence in the Bremerton area. Huh. The official who asked not to be identified said the abrupt disappearance of the interference could be related to the investigation. The outage was believed to have been caused by some kind of rogue signal from electronic communications gear that interfered with the functioning of the popular keyless remote entries. But just in that area. Weird stuff, huh? All right, here is Matthew Stein. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on the show, Art.
I'm
honored to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. It's hard to know where to start. It always is, Matthew, and I guess you view all kinds of things as coming. I certainly do. I know that you talk about the weather and earthquakes and all kinds of things that may be coming. What launched you into writing this book, When Technology Fails? Why?
That's a question a lot of people ask me. I never considered myself a survivalist. I've certainly, like I think many other people on the planet right now, have an uneasy feeling about what might be around in the future. But essentially, for about 20 years, I've had a morning practice of prayer and meditation, and I'm a design engineer. I have an MIT degree. and I've often kind of asked for solutions to problem, difficult design problems, and I've, you know, whether it's just my subconscious or somebody on a, you know, a guide in another plane helping me out, in my meditations I've often received patentable solutions to my difficult design problems. About 3 years ago, totally out of the blue and completely unrelated to anything I'd ever thought of doing in the past, I received a title, scope, and a full outline for this book in an instantaneous flash of inspiration. So it was, at the moment that it came to me, my first thought was, I can't possibly do this. This is a huge scope, and how could I do this? And sort of the intuitional voice sort of said, well, you know, if not you, who? And then I had the skills, the technical skills and the communication and writing skills and the research skills to put this project together.
Now, how did that message come to you? You said it was instantaneous regarding the name of the book, I guess, and the mission of the book?
Well, yeah, right? It basically was kind of like an outline, only it was more like a picture form and a thought. In other words, it wasn't like the voice of God in the book, the Bible, speaking to Moses.
No, burning books or bushes.
No burning books and bushes. No, you know, voice of Charlton Heston out in the clouds or anything. It was more like one moment it wasn't there, and nothing like it was there in my mind. And the next moment, an entire picture and scope and sort of outline of what a book was supposed to do. Kind of like a hologram, sort of. It had a picture of everything. Though certainly I had to go through all the effort of doing the research and the writing, but it was kind of like the big picture was there one moment, and the moment before it wasn't there.
You wouldn't call it divine intervention, would you?
Well, put it this way. No, there wasn't a signature that said this is Jesus speaking or this is God speaking, but it clearly felt like a higher power of some source, a higher inspiration, some kind of divine inspiration came through and said, kind of more like, instead of this is my idea, this is my task, sort of like we on this side, on this, whatever side that inspiration comes from, where did Mozart play his music from, you know,
sure.
I mean, et cetera, where does... How does one person on one side of the world have a Nobel Prize and share it with someone on the exact opposite side of the world for research that discovered the exact same new, brand new thing was done by totally unrelated people in totally unrelated parts of the world?
Well, Matthew, I'll sure give you this. A lot of people have the feeling that something big is pending, something big lies around the corner, and that, you know, everything's speeding up and we're really headed toward an event or events, that something's really coming down, put simply.
Well, I do believe that we're headed for a series of events and possibly culminating in some major event. As I've been writing the book, I'd start my day with kind of asking for guidance and direction, and basically I would rewrite everything I'd written the day before and then, you know, write some more. I did receive some specific instructions and information as I wrote this, and some of the information that I've received has been that there's going to be a large number of people who are going to need this book, maybe not tomorrow or the next day, maybe not even for a few years, but that in the not very distant future, probably within 10 years, there's going to be large numbers of people that are going to need this. And in the meantime, there's going to be smaller numbers of people for isolated events that are definitely going to...
All right, let's talk about what you mean when you say, when technology fails. What are you talking about? What kind of scale? We are a very, 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 very technological nation in America. So what do you mean by that?
Well, on the small scale, it's a rolling blackout or something. Is still relatively small, and that the blackout's over in a little while, and things go back to normal. On a larger scale, something like a massive hurricane like Hurricane Andrews, or an earthquake, a significant earthquake like the Chilean earthquake in the 1960s, if something like that came through the L.A. Basin, it would be years before, instead of basically snarling traffic and making things rather unpleasant for a lot of people and having a few hundred people have to bulldoze their homes, you'd have bridges down all over, you'd have business shut down, you'd have everything, like Kobe, Japan. You know, it would just be, the city would be wasted for many years to come. It would take many years to recover from an earthquake that was just a simple single point larger than the earthquake that ran through Northridge a few years back.
Uh-huh.
Or the earthquake, the Loma Prieta earthquake in the Bay Area. Many people don't realize a single point on an earthquake scale is a factor of 10. And when you have a building that's on the threshold of falling down, a factor of 10 can make the difference between minor damage and having to do the bulldoze remodel.
Well, all right.
On a larger scale...
Don't hold anything back for me. And by that I mean, if you had visions of a disaster... or a specific disaster, if it is as specific as you're saying now, then I want to know that.
Okay. I have not had a specific vision of a future, but I have certainly accepted the possibility of something like the electromagnetic pulse from, you know, sunspots or some kind of solar event as possibly frying electronics in the world. That would be the larger side, certainly, of
my
technology failing.
In that case, Matthew, you will be no doubt interested to know that right now we are having one of the largest solar events in recent history, that right now the solar count is at, well, it's way above 300, approaching probably 350. They're bracing for major class X flares, and the sun is just going putwaki and spitting at us and spitting at us. That's within the last few days. Just thought I would sort of underscore what you just said about the sun.
Right.
Did you know that?
I didn't realize that was going on at this moment in time. I'd heard something about higher than normal solar activity.
Real high right now, Matthew. Real high right now. The sun just went through a polarization flip. I don't know, about 4 weeks ago, I think, now. And now on the other side of that flip, it's really going berserko. And so, you know, there are scientists in Israel, Matthew, who believe that the dinosaurs were not killed by some big rock that smacked into Earth, but rather by a sudden flaring of our sun and radiation. Did you know that?
Yeah, I've also heard the possibility simply of a pole shift and causing a change in the radiation belts around the planet that allowed a huge amount of solar radiation to come down to the planet that the dinosaurs couldn't handle. I mean, there's a lot of different theories and possibilities. And
that's right.
Certainly something like that is a possibility in my future, though I don't claim to have received specific inside information on that. But I do believe I've been told that more and more people will be needing this book, both from the point of view of helping to become more sustainable on the planet and also from the point of view of being prepared in the event that some mid-range or long-range disruption in technology happens.
You've also talked about the weather.
Yes, the weather is this is strictly from a scientific point of view and a systems point of view. If you look at the weather in terms of global warming and in terms of what we're doing to the planet to disrupt what's been a very stable system for at least recent geological history, then strictly from a scientific point of view, we don't really know what... It's like we're experimenting. It's a big, giant experiment with planet Earth. We're pumping huge amounts of greenhouse gases. We've deforested half of the planet, and the trees act as a giant shock absorbers that help stabilize the system. And imagine if you took the shock absorbers off of one side of your car and drove down the road, what kind of response you'd get out of your car. You know, you'd hit a corner and you'd bounce like crazy and you'd have a terrible time staying on the road.
Yep.
Essentially, we're doing that to the planet right now. We're changing major variables like shock absorbers in the planet by both screwing around with the atmospheric concentrations of greenhouse gases and by deforesting the planet. And we don't really know what the response is going to be, other than that we know it's going to be far more unstable and increasingly unstable as time goes on. And what that means is we're going to see bigger storms, worse droughts, worse, you know, hotter hots, colder colds. You're just going to see crazy weather and increasingly wider swings and fluctuations of weather across the planet.
I've got a story here now that suggests Central Florida, if the drought continues in Central Florida, they're saying, soon people will turn on their faucets there and nothing's going to come out.
That's correct. I think people have gotten, since World War II in this country, people have become very used to a stable, reliable infrastructure that they could depend upon. You know, the electricity pretty much flowed all the time, or most all the time. The gasoline flows, the trucks flow, the trains flow.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has gotten used to everything working very nicely and smoothly. And I believe that we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg right now with things, the pendulum is swinging the other way. And with what we're doing to the systems of the planet, you're going to see much, much worse swings in the pendulum in future years. I think in 10 years you'll look back at this time and say, boy, we thought it was bad then. That was nothing.
Yes, and then there's man-made stuff, too. If that's not, it probably isn't part, at least. North Korea's state radio warned America yesterday that the scrapping of a 1994 agreement to help Korea build nuclear reactors would amount to, in quotes, a declaration of war. No, that's what I do. I laugh, too. I mean,
yeah.
We get all these things, and so a declaration of war.
Yeah, I don't know why we shouldn't be providing North Korea with nuclear reactors. I mean, you know, doesn't that seem like a smart thing to do?
Well, you see, we agreed to give them nuclear reactors, and so basically what they're saying to us is, if you're going to be an Indian giver, it's an act of war. At least that's the way I read this.
Does that mean that they're going to launch their few nuclear weapons back at us if
we don't
give them more nuclear reactors?
Let me read some more. It says, under the accord, America agreed to provide North Korea with two light water nuclear reactors and 500,000 tons of heavy oil a year. That would be every year until completion of the project. And in exchange, North Korea was to abandon its nuclear missile program. So, if we're Indian givers, I guess they start building missiles again or putting them back online, and it is an act of war. That might fall under the category of one of the things that could occur, Matthew.
Well, it always, I mean, I'm an engineer. I've been designing products and machines for almost 25 years now. And it always amazes me how non-engineers have such faith in technology. I mean, when you think back to Ronald Reagan, he just had this wonderful faith that us engineers and scientists could provide this magic blanket that would never fail and would work perfectly.
SDI.
Yes, and it would Star Wars, you know, that would cover the planet. And just like in the movie Star Trek, we'd have our shields up and everything would be fine. But the reality was that it was far cheaper to just make more weapons to totally overload Star Wars. It was like 1,000 times cheaper just to make more weapons to get through the shield than it was to make the shield. And when something can, like simple, like an O-ring, can cause the failure of the space shuttle, then you can understand that, you know, these are incredibly complex systems that are running this planet right now. And it doesn't take much to make them fail.
How about nuclear reactors?
Well, I was really quite amazed last night. I was listening when you were talking to Mr. Wasserman, and
about
he mentioned...
About San Onofre, and then you heard the story I read about what apparently really happened at San Onofre. It was quite serious.
Well, I'm actually talking about Three Mile Island.
Oh, yes, okay.
I mean, to hear that Three Mile Island had melted, 90% of the fuel had gone into meltdown.
Right.
And that they don't know, they cannot figure out why it didn't turn into a Chernobyl. I mean, can you imagine? There would be no nuclear program in this country, that's for sure, if Three Mile Island had been a Chernobyl and we had had blowing winds of radioactive gases floating all over the country, you know, dropping
fallout. There would have been no Art Bell, because I was real close to it. You may have heard that last night. I was there, and I was listening to the local radio reports. Hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, Matthew. We'll be right back. Matthew Stein is here. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
I gave you love. I bought the weed. talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest blackest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere, and Marie's the name of his latest flame. Though I smiled, the tears inside were burning. I wished him luck, and then he said goodbye. He was gone, but still his words kept returning. What else was there for me to do but cry? Would you believe that yesterday this girl was in my arms and swore to me she'd be mine eternally, and the reason made of the latest flame. Though I smiled, the tears inside were burning. I wished him luck, and then he said goodbye. He was gone, but still his words kept.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
You know, there's something different between this Elvis Presley record and every other, in my opinion, that he ever did. And I can't quite put my finger on it, but I know it grabs me.
Newsletter, read about the mysterious ley lines where UFOs are most often seen. Pyramids, crop circles appear, as well as the Coral Castle in Florida. And also stem cell research and contact with the dead, ETs, and so much more in the August After Dark. Call now. The lines are open. 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at www.coasttocoastam.com.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
Matthew, welcome back.
I'm here.
All right. Well, so technology obviously does fail. We were talking about Three Mile Island, and made a very good point. They many times when it fails, they don't really tell us about it. And then even reference the one I was reading about San Onofre. It's always a nothing report when you first hear it. Doesn't even, you know, it's page 43, a nothing report. But then it turns out it was a big deal after all. So, yeah, these things do fail, don't they?
Yeah, and as an engineer, I'm amazed that things don't fail more often, to be honest with you. I mean, it takes a tremendous, when you get a real complex system, it takes just a huge amount of effort on a large team of people. And in spite of your best efforts, things still do fail. You know, it's not a perfect world. Some of the other ways it might fail that a lot of people don't think about is for instance, it's failing in many ways in the health system. In the health systems right now, with when you look at mad cow disease, hoof and mouth.
Ah, yes.
And when you consider that we're feeding huge amounts of antibiotics, roughly 10 times as much goes to animals as goes to people. So what we're doing is we're creating a breeding ground for antibiotic-resistant bugs within our livestock around the planet. And with the constant use, kind of, they're starting to back off on it now because they're realizing a lot of the antibiotics that used to be the wonder, magic pills, kind of the medical fantasy of the magic pill, magic bullet that destroys the bug perfectly. A lot of our wonderful antibiotics are now useless for the most part because of the overuse of antibiotics. So one of the chapters in my book deals with alternative healing technologies, colloidal silver, grapefruit seed extract, herbal, prayer, a whole variety of different methods. And certainly, even today, without any external apparent failure of technology, there are many people experiencing health problems that are not responding to traditional medicines, and they could find a lot of value and benefit within that chapter.
Well, a lot of these bugs that you talked about that are developed despite the newest and greatest antibiotics that are fed to these animals also species jump. So you know, they go from the animals to the humans. So far, they say not true with the foot and mouth, but of course, mad cow, that's a whole different story. That has species jumped.
Right.
And literally eats our brains alive. I mean, that sounds horrible, but that's what it does.
Well, and certainly, you know, there's the contention that AIDS was grown in the lab as part of a biological warfare experiment. There's also the Rolling Stone article contention that AIDS came from through monkeys in Africa and was imported as part of by accident, because how do you look for something that you don't know exists, that it actually came as out of the cultures that were growing vaccines and was then spread around Africa in the early smallpox, or in the latest smallpox vaccinations that, quote, eradicated smallpox on the planet, that possibly that was responsible for spreading AIDS. But in any event, there are alternative therapies that appear to be very effective against AIDS. But if they are not patentable and don't have potential to make lots of money, then there's no effort really put into research on them.
Matthew, how many patents do you hold?
Somewhere around 10. I keep getting these notices in the mail that congratulations and why don't you spend a lot of money and buy some plaques because another one of your patents has just gone through. So without actually logging on and seeing which patents that were pending have come through, it's somewhere around 10.
Wow.
Yeah. Not very impressive compared to 500 for Benjamin Franklin or, you know, thousands for Edison.
No, it's 10 more than I have.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. 10 more than I have. And what sort of things have you patented? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I'm a gun for hire. I do product and machine design on an independent basis, so quite a variety. I was director of engineering for a Haas company, and they make safety equipment and drinking fountains. So I have a number of both design and utility patents. One, for instance, on a blending fail-safe blending system, to prevent technology from failing, which provides copious amounts of warm water for chemical drenches. And for instance, guys in a chemical plant in Alberta, and he gets concentrated nitric acid of fitting blows, and it blows nitric acid onto his Nomex vest, and it splashes up under his face shield all over his face.
Uh-huh.
And so he went into one of my polar showers and gets a warm drench to save his face. Otherwise, he would have been a Phantom of the Opera kind of guy. So I have several patents in that area. I have a patent on a special stacking mechanism for dollar bills and things for the gaming industry that can handle everything from a small ticket to a very large bill from Europe, you know, really big, much bigger than American dollar bill, and with one mechanism it can handle all of that.
Wow, that's like putting the PAL and the NTSC standard together somehow.
Yeah, and I've got patents on things like a new utility lighter, kind of like the new child lock mechanism for utility lighter, the lighters you light your barbecue with. So they really cover quite a variety of things. Yeah, you know, everything. I've designed everything from disk drives to fiberglass buildings to drinking fountains to telephone headsets. You know, quite a to 30-foot long assembly machines. Quite a variety of things.
Wow. Well, then you would know about technology. That's for sure. There are people who crunch numbers on this sort of thing on complex systems. And they can actually almost predict, I think, when complex systems are likely to fail or in what period of time there's likely to be a failure. Isn't that true?
Well, that's statistical analysis. And that's kind of like earthquake prediction. It's sort of, they look at patterns and they look at the statistics and the complexity of things, and they can come up with a percent chance of failure, which essentially means that there's always a chance of failure. Like there's always a chance anywhere in the world of a super earthquake coming along and just knocking every building down. But in many parts of the world, the statistical chance is very minuscule, but it doesn't mean it can't happen. A lot of people don't realize the largest earthquake on record in America happened in Missouri, changed the course of the Mississippi River for 100 miles and knocked down chimneys 500 miles away in Cincinnati, Ohio. But so it's a statistical prediction. It's not like seeing something in a vision. In other words, it doesn't really tell you when it's going to happen, or it just gives you a percent idea of the chance it might happen.
Hmm. All right, so you were inspired one way or the other, and we don't even have to know, to write this book. And this book does what? It says if these things happen, if the weather really becomes awful, untenable, if there's a massive earthquake, if there's a flood, a drought, whatever it is, war even, I suppose.
That's correct.
Here's what you can do. So you've been on the here's the problem and here's the solution side of it, right?
Right. The book offers a wide variety of advice and solutions for everything from preparing. There's a good chapter on emergency preparations. Say you want to be prepared in the event that things go down for 2 or 3 days or maybe a week. It helps you decide kind of what level of preparation you wish to be at. And it's not just about emergency preparations. It also covers things like green building technologies, how to build buildings which use less raw materials, contribute less to global warming, contribute less to deforestation, things like rammed earth, straw bale, modern adobe, passive solar design. It also has a chapter on helping you to evaluate it in your own energy independence and plan and design a system to become more energy independent using renewable energy.
Well, you say here, be your own independent power company.
That's correct. That's correct. So you can, using the chapter, each chapter is very practical. It gives you practical how-to information and introductory information. And then it also provides you with a resource guide to the best books and sources for information and materials on the topic covered by the chapter. So, for instance, in the energy chapter, it gives you the basic tools to evaluate your energy needs, to kind of start planning a renewable energy system, a solar system. Perhaps you have decent wind in your area. It helps you evaluate if it's going to be worth investing in wind or not. Perhaps you have a creek and mini hydro or micro hydro might be the way to go. So the chapter gives you a really good introduction to renewable energy systems and what you might be able to do in your own place.
Now, you said a creek. That's interesting. And you said mini hydro. That's interesting, too. If you had a creek running in your backyard or near you,
yes,
what could you actually do with that? What would be possible?
Well, if you're really lucky, and let's face it, very few of us are going to be in this position, but you might. If you had a creek that, say, had 10 or 20 feet of elevation drop
right
across your property, then you could make, and you had a modest gallon flow, then you could make a small dam on it and run a pipe down and go through a micro hydro turbine, and that could provide you with totally free energy. It would be, runs 24 hours a day. It's not like the sun. If you have a creek, it's a year-round creek. It doesn't dry up. You've got energy night and day, 24 hours a day.
And that would generate enough energy to run a house?
That's correct.
A little boulder dam in your backyard.
That's right. A very mini, mini boulder dam. Now, the other thing, if you had a creek that, say, had a decent flow to it but not much drop.
I'm curious. Are you really allowed to do that? I mean,
if it's your creek and your property, you can.
You can.
You can't go out and dam a big river on your property, but if you've got a little creek, then there's no one to stop you or cause you any problems from making a small dam and a little pipeline and running
excellent.
A micro hydro turbine.
I never thought of that. That's really an excellent idea. And when I was a child, we had one just like that in our backyard, and think of all that wasted electricity.
Well, most of us won't have the luxury of a creek that would provide you with micro hydro, but the book actually provides the simple equations so you can evaluate what kind of power you might get out of your creek. It provides you with information. Now, what a lot of people don't realize, too, is the thing called megawatts. That's what Amory Lovins coined that term a long time ago, and what he was saying is that often it's cheaper to save and conserve energy, far cheaper than it is to generate that extra power. And especially when you're talking about a home power system, then, like, if you're going to run things off solar panels, well, those panels are pretty expensive.
Mm.
You're talking $500 for something to run a couple of light bulbs. And so if you replace those light bulbs with, for instance, you can replace 5 light bulbs with energy-saving light bulbs for the cost of $100 and save yourself a $500 solar panel. So in the national outlook, the same thing goes true. We could go out and do insulation programs and solar programs and rebates on energy-saving devices, and we could pay a lot less money than it actually would cost to drill more oil, generate more power with another oil or gas or coal-fired power plant.
On the other hand, though, locally, if the power goes out, that solar panel is going to be looking pretty good.
That's correct. Locally, if that power goes out, but what you do is you want to do too. You want to be smart about it. You know, if you wanted to make a solar system to power an energy hog house, you know, you might be talking $50,000. And you might go out and invest.
Excuse me. I don't mean to laugh, but I just spent. That's about what I spent.
Okay. But you can go out and invest a few thousand dollars in energy-saving devices and cut $30,000 off your cost of your system.
Yes.
Okay?
Oh, sure.
So that's where the megawatt thing comes in and the planning. And the planner helps you figure out what really makes sense in your place.
Here's our real everyday problem, though, Matthew.
This is a real thing.
We live in a really high-tech society. And the job I do, for example, sitting here doing this in my own little studio with the uplink equipment and computers everywhere, and you know what it takes to do what I'm doing right now?
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's Energy Hog City. There's no question about it. And I can't do without it. So
I understand.
I have replaced my light bulbs. I do the best I can, but there are high current devices here that I can't avoid. Period.
Well, you're in the business.
Yeah. You know,
but most people aren't in that. And so most people, for a much more modest investment, a couple thousand dollars to start, they could do a small mini system to give them very basic backup energy in the event of a power outage.
Sure.
And perhaps they could go to $10,000 and make something that could really start providing more of a level of comfort in the event that things go down. And one of the nice things about these renewable energy systems is they're kind of tinker toy systems. You can add modular blocks as time goes on. It's not like, well, I put this money into the small thing, so it's wasted. It's like, no.
You can add
start.
On. Yeah.
You add on. As you have the time and the money, and then you can add more to your system.
What about food? Does your book contemplate the need for food?
Certainly, certainly. And in the food chapter, the main focus is on sustainable agriculture, how to grow food. So it focuses on grow biointensive methods, which are John Jevons methods. And John Jevons has been referred to as contributing more to reducing suffering in the world than almost anyone on the planet, because he has help develop and spread the knowledge of these biointensive practices. And they're very low-tech oriented. In other words, a poor subsistence farmer in Argentina who's just scraping by can learn these methods that will rebuild the soil and that will use about a fifth of the water and will actually improve yields every year without chemicals and chemical fertilizers and other things. And he will be able to turn his subsistence farm into a farm that provides bountiful for himself and his family.
How does he do that?
And he does that through these methods called double digging, grow biointensive methods. It's where it's a special soil preparation, and it's heavy on organic composting. And it's also a special way of planting so that you have more of a microclimate in the planting. It requires far, far less in the way of watering. So, for instance, there's some wonderful pictures in his websites of this guy in Africa, and he's got just this brilliant smile, and he's holding up these incredible-looking grapefruits, and you see this wonderful orchard behind him. And the thing is that it was, quote, impossible to grow grapefruits at his location because of lack of water. But using the biointensive practices, he was able to take an area that, with traditional methods, it was just out of the question. You couldn't grow an orchard there. And he was able to grow it. And he's just using his sweat. You know, he's not using any high-tech methods. This is just a poor farmer in the middle of Africa.
Well, but what replaces water?
Well, it's not replacing the water. It's the way it's planted. See, basically, the modern agriculture is set up for the convenience of machines, and it doesn't duplicate nature very well. Biointensive practices plant things on much closer spacings, They do special extra deep soil preparations that allows the roots to take the nutrients from the soil. And because of the close spacings and the extra deep things, you have like a mini climate, and it conserves water. You don't have the kind of evaporative losses of waters. So if they were planted and treated normally, it would be too dry and the plants would die. But because of the biointensive soil preparations and plantings, it conserves the water and the nutrients that are in the soil so that they're available to the plant and not just going away and washing away or evaporating out into the air.
All right, I've got it. Stay right there. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back. My guest is Matthew Stein. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001. Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
Hey, good morning from the high desert. How you doing? Matthew Stein is here, and he's telling us how to survive, actually. It really is a kind of a survival program in a way. Things that could happen, we all know about those. They're around us every day. However, what you can do about it is what he's all about. Different methods of growing things, of getting power, of protecting yourself. We'll talk more about that in a moment. I do have a story to tell about the creek we had in our backyard. We'll do that right after this.
Last night or last week, did you know that all the guest information and show information is available online at www.coasttocoastam.com? Our webmaster, Lex, has posted everything right down to the bumper music. Also on the website is a service called Streamlink. Man, is this great. For about 15 cents a day, you can have access to live streaming audio no matter where you are, as long as you're close to a computer. You'll also get archived shows from the last 90 days, and you can hear the show on your computer anytime you wish. Plus, you'll have access to my Tuesday night chats. That's once a month. So get the inside story on the show and the inside story on what's going on with Coast to Coast AM. You simply log on to coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com, and you'll be glad you did. Streamlink, it's a great service. It's private. You even get a private email address directly to me. So just log on to coasttocoastam.com and read all about it.
Now we take you back to the night of March 27th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
I have got a ghost photo on my website right now that's a real blow-away from Germany. Take a look at it. It looks like something out of Ghostbusters coming right out of that winery that looks more like a church. It's an amazing photograph on my website right now. Then Matthew brought up the subject of a creek behind your house. And I'm going to tell a brief story. I hope my mom's not listening in North Carolina right now. We had a creek behind our house in Media, Pennsylvania, when we lived there. And it was a pretty good creek. We could have, if I'd followed Matthew's advice or known about it, we could have built a little boulder dam there. But we didn't. My mom was into projects when I was young. Always had a project going. And one day she had a vision. She decided that since we had this creek running through our backyard, she would build a swimming pool right in the middle of the creek, virtually damming up the creek, and then providing a way for the creek to run around the swimming pool on both sides. So, of course, we did this, myself and my two sisters and my mom and my dad. Let me tell you, for an entire summer, every day, we had pool duty. And what that meant was we had to go out and we had to first dam up the stream, then we had to build this pool. Oh, my God. It was like slave labor. Every day, all of us had to be out there doing this. And it went on for the whole summer until finally we did it. We built a concrete pool in the middle of this creek. Blood, sweat, and tears, but we built it. Oh, my God, did we build it every day. It was horrible. Anyway, at the end of summer when it was still hot and the pool was finally done, my mom opened the valves, and, of course, the swimming pool filled automatically from the creek. The problem was that the creek running around the swimming pool kept the water at a temperature that I would describe as just above freezing. So that, and then there were trees, too, that gave shadow to it. So when I tell you the water in this pool was cold, I'm talking about turn your lips blue cold. I don't care how hot the day was. The water in this pool was always at or near freezing. It was barely above freezing. You'd go in there and your lips would be blue in about a minute and a half. But my mom, staunchly every day, went down to that pool and went swimming. And she would come back and her whole face would be pale and her lips would be blue. She would keep trying to get us to go into the pool. None of us would have anything to do with it. That sucker was freezing and it always was going to be freezing. So if there's anything you don't want to build in the middle of a creek, it's a dam and a swimming pool. Bear that in mind, just in case. Silly story, but true story. We did that all summer long. Matthew, you're back on the air again.
I'm here.
All right. Do inventors, when they, like my mom, for example, when she built that pool, do they sometimes have a grand idea that, you know, turns out all completely wrong and not to work at all? In other words, you construct an entire pool, but you forget there's a creek running around both sides of it, keeping it right at creek temperature.
Yeah, well, that definitely happens. There's a process to inventing and design, and typically, you know, when you're doing the right process, you do call a proof of concept, where you don't invest tons of money in tooling and molds and things like that, but you kind of try to mock things up as cheaply and quickly as you can and make sure that the basic idea is right. But sure, even then, you have ideas that, you know, sometimes you pour in tons of money into and they just don't pan out.
I tell you, my mom was a Marine drill instructor, and she would, every day we had pool duty. I mean, it was like reveille in the morning, up, eat, pool. And every day, all summer long, we did that, pool duty.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, I, you have a lot of ideas, you have a lot of notions about how people can keep themselves prepared for either a short time or
God forbid, a long time if something really horrible happens. And I want to give the audience an opportunity to ask you some questions. So we'll get to that shortly, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
All right.
I just wanted to mention a couple things real quick.
Fire away.
One is that the, you know, some people tend to be in awe of someone like myself that receives some intuitional information about something. But the higher powers that are assisting people on the planet, call it God, call it your angels, call it your guide, whatever you want to call it.
What do you call it?
My guides and God. And even though I was born and raised Jewish, I'm really a, call it a mystical Christian at this point in my life. But I don't really have blinders on. I'm not, you know, I read different spiritual writings from all over the planet. But what I'm saying is that when I asked kind of my intuitional guidance for what, you know, is there anything special they wanted me to say in the show, the answer I got was that this guidance is available to everyone. There is no special favored people in God's eyes. That basically that what it says like in the Bible, ask and you'll receive, knock and the, you know, it should be opened unto you, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's available to everyone regardless.
You've got to be open to it.
Right. Part of the free will setup of the universe is that you have free will. So they're not going to shove it down your throat. You got to ask for it. That's kind of part of the rules. It's sort of like the Star Trek, you know, non-interference rule. It's like they'll interfere with you only if you want them to.
How about you personally? If the worst happened right now, Matthew.
Okay.
We're going to find out if you practice what you preach. If the worst were to happen right now, the power went out, communications went down, the roads were impassable, how would you fare?
I would fare decently. I wish that I had a more energy-efficient home and a nice setup like you do, which is in my game plan, but unfortunately, from writing the book, it strapped me financially.
Huh.
But that's definitely in my not very long-distance future to have that in there. I certainly have all of the backpacking and survival gear. I would fare very well as far as, even though I live at high altitude in the Sierras, clothing and preparation-wise, no problem, no sweat. Food storage, well, I probably got a month or something on there, but I'm very good at being able to go out and forage. For instance, a lot of people don't realize that you can strip the green layer of bark off of trees and live off of that. The Darner Party, who met their demise about 10 miles from my house.
Oh, you're up that high.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm in Truckee, California. Donner Lake is in Truckee, where the Darner Party had their famous barbecue.
Right.
If they had known what I knew, they wouldn't have had to resort to what they did to survive that winter.
Okay, let's stop at the bark thing. Green bark. Now, I would not have thought that you could strip bark off a tree and do anything nutritious with green bark.
I wouldn't have either.
So what do you do?
What do you do? Well, there's several things you can do. You can... It's the green layer. It's the growing layer of the bark.
Right.
You know, the outer layer is no good, and the dead wood on the inside is no good for you. You know, you're not a beaver. You can't handle that.
Right.
But if you strip the green layer off and try not to do the whole way around the tree so you kill the tree, then you can cut it into strips and kind of boil it like spaghetti. You can pound it into a flour and
really?
Use it to make bread. Yeah, so... It is something. I mean, you could live for months on the stuff if you had to. I'm not saying it would be much fun. I'm not saying it would be a whole and a balanced diet.
What does it taste like? Chicken? I'm serious. What does it taste like? I'm joking, but I'm serious too.
Probably just it tastes kind of like. Oh, you ever chewed on a green twig?
yes, actually, I have.
Yeah,
sure.
Well,
sure. Everybody has.
That's about what you got. Not exactly a culinary delight, but it. It will provide something in your stomach, and it will provide some energy for you, and you can subsist on it. You know, I mean, I wouldn't recommend it for the long run, but you can subsist on it. And certainly, as far as collecting herbs and stuff, depends on the time of year. Winter time in Truckee and the High Sierras is when I think of as the hardest and the worst. And let's face it, if there's something really goes down bad, the little furry animals that run around here. Your chances of getting them after when everybody else in the neighborhood's looking for them, it's not going to be really good after a while. So, but there's lots of trees out there. So, The book does give information on foraging and for wild, and information on what kind of animals you can eat, you know, what kind of grubs and bugs. I mean, again, not a culinary delight, but you can. The grubs
Have you eaten bugs?
No, but I have eaten forage for plants. To be honest with you,
would you eat a bug? Have you seen Survivor on TV?
Yeah.
Have you seen those big, ugly? Oh, you haven't seen it.
No, but
well, they have these big, ugly, gushy, horrible worms that they had to eat.
Right.
I mean, could you eat one of those?
Yeah, if I had to. But you know, to be honest with you, some of the advice in my book, things like if you got these worms, if you dry them up and pound them up and put them in kind of like some stew, they're really not too bad.
Worm stew?
Yeah, in other words, if they're good enough for the robins, they make robins grow and thrive. Well, they can make people grow and thrive, too. But, you know, it's not very high on my list. And since I'm not being paid lots of money to go on TV and do that, I kind of reserve that for when I have to.
But it would be so sensational. I mean, you really want to get your message across, right? Trust me, you eat worms, too. People will watch.
Yeah, but, you know, my message isn't just about survival. It's about sustainability. It's about what you can do. It's about self-healing. It's about being able to do more for yourself today, right now, while technology hasn't failed. And then also it's about what can we do, like, on the planet collectively. You know, individually, none of us is going to save the world. None of us is going to change the future. Collectively, we can do it. There's a story about the 100th monkey and the collective consciousness. And I believe collectively we can change it. Things have happened in history, like slavery. You know, President Lincoln didn't personally end slavery.
Like when I was a kid.
Yeah, millions of people, right, like when you're a kid. When I was a kid, millions of people got together and collectively chose to end slavery. President Lincoln was the person that took it to the government level. If we're going to make a sustainable future, a future for our children, then collectively we need to bring it to the government level.
Let me ask you this, Matthew.
Sure.
What makes you think there's a chance in hell of that happening until we have the emergency that necessitates it?
That's probably correct, but the other thing is, when you look at the systems of the planet, if you wait until everything's fallen apart, then that's kind of, you know, there's the old saying that says, is it not too late to dig a well when you're already thirsty? It's like you have to look ahead, look at where we're headed, and make the change. Now, right now, there's not a snowball's chance in hell we're going to make that change.
That's right.
But in 10 years' time, perhaps the people on the planet will be fed up. For instance, if your gasoline bill for your car,
yeah,
say you're spending $50 a week.
Right.
Now, how many of, if you're strapped spending $50 a week, you know, you're driving a big car $50 a week. Now, with the oil, world oil production predicted to start declining within the next decade, no matter what anybody does, there's only so much oil in the ground. And the predictions are basically within a few years to 20 years, it's going to actually decline. So you've got a world that's got every year they want more oil.
Yep.
But now, all of a sudden, you'll have Saudi Arabia, those places will be declining in oil production, just a simple matter of, you know, they've already pumped the easy stuff to get out.
Sure.
And so now, say your bill goes up 10, 20 times what it is right now. How many of us can afford to spend 10 or 20 times as much on our gasoline and heat as we're spending today? But you're looking at that. You know,
well, they're getting the first little taste of that, a 46% taste in California right now.
That's right. We're getting a taste of that. But you know, project down 10 years. I mean, right now you're seeing a few people pulling strings nationally. You're seeing some games that have been played. You're seeing some real, you know, some real shortages.
Oh, the games have not yet really even begun, Matthew.
Right. But now imagine if there's nothing, that it's not just a game-playing thing. That's just plain, they're not getting the stuff out of the ground. They're having to resort to more expensive things. They're having to take coal and gasify it, you know, to make different types of fuels. They're having to do that because you have a decline in the petroleum age. Now you're looking at having to resort to just more expensive ways of producing energy. Energy won't just go away. It's just going to get more expensive. It's supply and demand. Look what happened in the 70s with an artificial constriction on the part of OPEC. I mean, we were paying $2 a gallon back in the late 70s.
I remember those. I remember the lines. Oh.
Oh, I remember waking up at 5 in the morning and parking my car around the corner in the gasoline line just so that we had a spot reserved for when the pumps opened up. And imagine now that you have a crisis like this that's not going to go away because there's no, you know, you can't, sure, you can go out and get 3 months more of oil production in this country by drilling a, you know, an environmentally sensitive place, but eventually you run out of that. It's just plain not going to keep up with demand, and so the price is going to skyrocket. I mean, that's coming. That's and you can proactively, you know, Stephen Covey made tons of money with his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He studied the most effective people in the world and said, well, what are they doing that's different from the rest of us average Joes to make them so effective? And one of the first things they did is they're proactive, and they begin with the end in mind. So what they do is they have a picture of where they're trying to get, and then they do first things first to get there.
That's an interesting line. They begin with the end in mind.
Right. So in other words, they're having a picture of where they want to get, and then they do these very effective things to get them from point A to point B. Now, if our picture of the future is that we know that these things are coming energy-wise, and we want a sustainable future for our world, and we want a really wonderful climate for our children to grow up in, we don't want a totally polluted world where everyone's dying of cancer, we don't want a world where no one can afford to, you know, stay warm in the winter, then they say, okay, well, let's picture the world we want, and now let's map out a path to get from A to Z. You know, here's Z, which is like this good future with which is sustainable. And
but see, you're talking about actual leadership here.
That's correct. That's saying that it's not so important what my profit is in the next 6 months. What's important is, are we healthy in 10 years? Are we doing things right in 20 years? Do we have a good social climate? Do we have a good ecosystem?
But we have corporations in America which are very important, and what they're worried about is what their profit loss figure is going to look like for the next quarter. That's what they're worried about.
When you're quarter based, it's really hard to plan. Now people can make
the change. It's impossible. I mean, you're talking about, let's plan for 10 or 20 years into the future, or maybe even just 5 years into the future. hold it right there. We'll be right back. We're at the bottom of the hour. We are going to begin to take calls for Matthew Stein, who has written a book called When Technology Fails. But we know, don't we? It never fails. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM, Top of the Morning.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 27th, 2001.
Good morning. Matthew Stein is here. He's an inventor. He's a guy with a book that I think was divine inspiration. He might argue with that a little, but somehow or another it came to him that way. And it basically is telling you how to survive. That's really what it's called, When Technology Fails, but that's what it's all about. It warns of all kinds of things, bad weather, earthquakes, floods, and I guess inherent in this is that this stuff is going to happen. And I guess we know it's going to happen, don't we? So 25 earth-friendly things you can do, scattered all about his book. If you have any questions for Matthew Stein, that's what we're going to do coming next.
July 7th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Matthew Stein is my guest, and his book again is When Technology Fails, and we all know it darn well can. So back to Matthew. Here he is. Matthew, are you there?
Yes, I'm back.
All right. Some people would like to speak with you, so I thought we'd do a segment of open phones. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right.
Let me just clarify one thing.
All right.
I do believe it was divine inspiration that inspired me to do the book. I just didn't... It didn't receive a signature when I got the inspiration, so I can't say it was Jesus or Buddha or God or whoever, but I do believe it was divinely inspired. Just no signature, and I'm not ascribing it to any particular power, but a higher power.
Something external to your own brain.
That's correct. Something outside of my own brain that felt like a higher source of wisdom and knowledge, basically, I believe, tasked me to write this book. And so it's hard to claim credit for it. Certainly, I put the work into it. I mean, it took a massive amount of work, but I believe that the inspiration was not just Matthew Stein thinking it up.
Well, since you didn't get a name, I think it's reasonable to have put Matthew Stein on there.
Yeah, Matthew Stein is the author. Divinely Inspired, authored by Matthew Stein.
All right. All right. You're going to love this. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Matthew Stein, and you have an idea about global warming, is it?
Yes, I do.
Where are you?
I'm in Central Texas.
Central Texas.
Yes.
All right, Matthew, I want you to listen really closely to what this man is about to say.
Sure. Actually, I'm 14.
You're 14?
Yeah.
All right, and so your idea is?
My idea is, there's over 500 active volcanoes.
In the world?
In the world.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
As an inventor, yes. Try to listen to this, Matthew.
Okay.
500 active volcanoes, right?
Yes. And we have a bunch of nukes that we want to get rid of.
Thousands.
Thousands. So we should send all the nukes that we want to get rid of into these active volcanoes, plugging them up and...
Launching nuclear weapons into the volcanoes.
Yes.
500 of them, worldwide.
I could see sending them into outer space to burn up in the sun or something, but launching them into volcanoes that are likely to blow their tops and spew radioactive waste all over the planet is probably not a really good idea.
From an inventor's point of view.
From a scientist and engineer inventor point of view, that's correct. I would advise against it.
Okay.
Okay, so you might want to get a committee to work on that one before moving ahead. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Matthew Stein. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Hello.
My name is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Art. Hi, Matthew. Wanted to say good evening, and Art, pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Missouri right now, headed northbound. I'm actually going to get off the exit here in a little bit.
All right.
Just a chat.
Okay.
I applaud you, Matthew, for your book. I think it's a very good book and what it's presenting to people. I personally have none of these things, but I have a great desire to get involved in these areas.
Well, one of the nice things about the book...
Because it's a good desire to do that. So, I just wanted to say thank you for that.
One of the nice things about the book is it's a great CYA book, cover your behind.
Right.
You can have it on your shelf, and even if you haven't really prepared, if things go down, you will be way, way, way better off with my book on the shelf. Now, whether it's just going down for a week, perhaps as a hurricane, perhaps as an earthquake, perhaps as a terrorist act, perhaps just, something causes the grid to fry for a while, whether it's
right.
2 days or a week or a month or a year, you're going to be in much better shape if you have my book than if you don't. Naturally,
exactly.
If you have the book, you might become motivated to read some of it and make some preparations so you're a little bit better prepared than just having the book. But just having the book is a whole lot better than nothing.
Right, which was my whole thing with the Y2K preparation. From listening to our show, I went out and got 2 years of food and all that stuff, and mm-hmm. Some folks said, it's just, you just wasted your money. But I didn't look at it like that, and I still do not look at it like that. For who knows? You know, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and there might be a great need for that in your life. And
actually,
it'll be just to get you over the edge, to get you through.
Yep. All right, caller, thank you. Actually, you know, it's a kind of a dark humor sort of thing, but a lot of people did prepare for the worst with Y2K. They spent billions of dollars. They actually pretty much cured the Y2K problems. But now, I mean, here we are, not that far away from the Y2K moment,
yeah.
And now almost everything that everybody feared about Y2K appears to be occurring now.
Right. Now, I didn't do much preparation for Y2K. People asked me, what do you think is going to happen? And I definitely had some stuff around. I wanted to be prepared in the event that things went down for, you know, a week or two. I thought perhaps something will affect the grid. But in the long run, I feel that, yeah, I didn't think much was going to go on with Y2K, but I do feel within the next 10 years you're going to look back at today and say, boy, remember when gas was this much and when, you know, you could just go to the grocery store and get everything you wanted anytime you wanted and all that stuff. So I don't know when it's coming or what's going to cause it, but I believe you'll just see an increasing instability in things over.
Here's what I tell people, Matthew. I say, if you want to understand how dependent you really are on technology, go outside to your breaker box, to your main breaker for your house or your apartment, whatever, and just throw your breaker off so that you have no electricity, and go back inside your house and spend, oh, I don't know, about an hour. It's like living in a tomb. No, it really is.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing works. Television, radio, lights, all the things that you take for granted are suddenly useless. And frankly, your whole apartment is more or less useless.
Yeah, especially if it's 10 degrees outside or 5 below zero.
Well, then it's life-threatening. But I'm just talking about under average, even decent weather conditions. You go back inside that house with no power, and you're walking around in a tomb.
Yeah, and you know, something that really brought things home, a couple years back, we had an earthquake, a shaker that went through that was centered about 7 miles from my home. And I sleep in my birthday suit, you know, with nice down comforters and stuff on my bed at night. And it was middle of winter in Truckee, and I woke up and was running around the house in my birthday suit, and I thought, boy, if my house started collapsing and I sprinted outside in my birthday suit, 10 below, my car keys in the house, you know, no clothing, in my bare feet, it's like, it really drove home how I needed to have supplies, preparations, extra food, extra clothing, extra keys outside of my home.
Imagine how awful it would be, too, if your house collapsed and there you were, butt naked, outside, without even your car keys, and you had written a book called When Technology Fails.
That's correct.
That just wouldn't do, would it?
No. So now I have my keys stashed outside. I've got extra clothing and things stashed, you know, outside where, in the event that we're in earthquake country, I've got to consider that possibility. Plus, I mean, one day, a couple years ago, I was sitting working at my computer, plugging away, and these friends of my son drove up and came in the house, looked at me and said, "Where's the fire?" And I said, "What fire?" And they pointed out the window, and I said, "Oh, my God." There was a 500-foot plume of smoke 100 yards from my house rising into the sky, and I could see flames through the woods. And there wasn't, I mean, no sirens, no nothing. And I was just sitting there working at my computer, totally oblivious that if the winds were blowing the other direction, my house would be burning down within 2 to 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that luckily the winds blew away from my house, and they were able to put it out. But if they were blowing the other way that day, it would have gone right through the subdivision. And it would have been, my house would have been the first to go, you know, and I would have been there with nothing.
And it would have been very fast.
Very, very,
very fast.
I mean, within 5 minutes, if the wind was going the other way, within 5 minutes, my house would have been engulfed in flames. There wouldn't have been a thing I could have done about it.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Matthew Stein. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. You're going to have to yell at us. I can barely hear you.
Okay. I was trying to find out some information. Y'all were saying earlier how the power crisis in California and the shortage of fuel and things of that nature. What I'm curious about is it the deregulation that is causing the problem that I understand correctly? Is that correct? with the...
Oh, this is a big argument. I mean, some people say it's deregulation. Others say it's real shortage because they didn't build power plants. So rather not, I'd rather not get into that. It's just a big argument.
Right. I don't claim to know the answer to that.
Okay.
But I do know that we're basically reached the halfway point in our consumption of global resources of oil, and half of what we've done in the last 150 years has been consumed in the last 30 years. So we're consuming at an increasing rate, which means that the second half of the world oil isn't going to last nearly as long as it took to take the first half.
Gotcha. I'm kind of curious, in your book, do you give... I know you say you give preparations, but do you also give ideas of regionally, like what types of foods and things of that nature you may be able to find and identify with and prevent to, like, maybe mishap and grab a wrong type of food? I know you were talking earlier about the barks and things like that off the tree in your local area.
No, it's not just my local area. It does talk about which trees in general across the country. Now, I'm not talking about South America or Africa. But I'm giving a lot of general information that's good for anywhere in this country.
No, wait a minute. Do you know where I live?
Yes.
Where are you, caller?
Alabama.
Alabama.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you probably got trees in Alabama, right?
Yes, totally.
All right. Well, see, we don't have trees here in the desert. I live in the desert. Not high desert. You know what we have? We have cactus.
Yeah,
and we have little shrubs, and we have plants. And if you pick the wrong one and eat it, you're going to die because it's poisonous.
You do have ants and grubs, though. And worms.
Ants and grubs and worms. Yeah, we've got those.
Yeah, desert areas are a lot harder to forage in than many other areas. And one of the things I do, see, each chapter of my book gives some really good, basic, practical how-to information.
How long would a person have to go, in your estimation, Matthew, without eating before they would munch a worm?
In America?
Yep.
A lot of people would probably have to go about 24 hours. You know, Americans are not very used to...
That's not very long, really, 24 hours.
They're not very used to fasting and starving, and they're really used to getting things when they want it now. You know, it's like, oh, I'm starving. Where's the McDonald's? I mean, I don't think that... One of the scary things is what's going to go... With people with such who are so used to having everything when they want it now... you know, in this country, when all of a sudden they can't get what they want right now, I think you're going to find a lot of freaking out people when they're... I mean, I've fasted for over a week, so I know that I can handle it and deal with it for a significant period of time.
That'd be no worm for Matthew for at least a week.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Put me in that situation. But most people don't have that kind of background and discipline and experience, and I think they're going to start feeling headachy and nauseous within 24 hours of not having a meal, and they're gonna have to have something.
Well, we sure are a hardened bunch, aren't we? We're pretty soft in America, is the truth. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Matthew Stein. Hello.
Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Good morning, sir. This is Robert from the San Joaquin Valley, California.
Hey Robert.
Mr. Stein, your appearance on Mr. Bell's show this evening is very interesting. I appreciate very much.
Well, thank you.
Two quick questions. First of all, about your book, how does somebody who really appreciates it and wants to get the news out to many others, you know, over here in California, talk about people freaking out. I think around July and August of this year, that's what's going to happen to a lot of Californians with no power.
I'll admit, yes.
Yeah, so...
110 in the Central Valley, 120, and no power for the AC. It's going to be hard on a lot of people.
It's going to be very tough, and I would like very much to present your book to people, so I'll be picking up a bunch of them. I guess I can get those through Barnes & Noble also, could I not?
And you can get them through Barnes & Noble. You can order it at any bookstore.
How much is your book?
It's $19.95.
That's not bad.
I mean, my publisher did a wonderful job of trying to keep the book affordable. If you look at it, it's a big book format. It's 8.5 by 11, double column.
Wow.
You know, big book.
That is big.
And it's 425 pages.
Ooh, that is big.
So if it was just a regular size book, you're talking 600-700 pages. And to get a book like that for only $19.95 is a real deal. Now you can order it. It's available through all the major distribution channels. So if a bookstore doesn't carry it, you can just request at your local corner bookstore, and they'll get it for you.
Mr. Bell, I have one other quick question, if it's okay, sir.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Stein, you mentioned some inventions that intrigued me, for someone who has hundreds of companies available, who funds and wants to create jobs and make good environmentally safe products and things, is there a way for a person to get a hold of you to discuss these products?
I have a website for the book.
Yeah, we've got a link to that on our website. Do you have an email address?
And my email address is actually through my engineering website, and the email address is Matt, M-A-T with one T, and then the at sign, and it's stein-design.com. That's stein-design.com. So even, and there's also a link to that same email address to contact the author through my
website
for the book, which is www.wentechsales.com.
Yeah, I think one is your book site links to your other site. So
right, the book site links to the engineering site.
Yeah, once they get there, they can make their way around.
Right, right.
Okay, so that's how people can get hold of you. And again, the number, the 800 number for the book is 1-800-253. Stop me if I'm wrong.
That's correct.
253-2747. 1-800-253-2747. And
right.
Even if you don't read it, you still say it's good to buy the book and just have it sitting there, right?
Just in case. You know, if even if it was just for an ice storm for a few days or whether it's something longer, to just have it on your bookshelf. I mean, I urge people to read it because I think you'll find a lot of fascinating stuff in it. And I think it'll open your eyes in many directions that you really didn't, weren't very aware of. But to have it just in case is I can't think of one comprehensive book, you know, that would cover more things and help you out more than this book, just in case. And certainly, each chapter is a resource guide. So if you find you're intrigued by a chapter and you want to go further, then the resource guide at the end of the chapter will show you what book to buy. Because, you know, to do a real in-depth on any one topic in a chapter requires a whole book in itself. So, I mean, there's a lot in my book, but I couldn't do everything.
You couldn't do it all?
No.
Will there be another book?
It depends on if this book pays itself off, then I can definitely write another book, you know.
I see.
I mean, when you take 2 years of time and you got a family and a business.
It took you 2 years to write this.
Well, I have it was 3 years from conception to publication. I figured there's 2 years of labor in it, but there was a 9-month period where I basically pushed my engineering to the side, did about 10 hours a week in engineering, and I put 70 hours a week in the average into writing the book. So,
holy smokes.
So, I mean, it was a massive effort. I figure I've got 2 years of labor, actual labor, into the book, and it was, like I said, a 9-month period where I just basically rented a separate office away from my normal office and up in there.
Right. When did your book become available to the public?
Thanksgiving. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't available on BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com until roughly the first of the year.
So then your book was in you were working on it when Y2K was approaching.
Yeah, I was working on it before I got the inspiration before I'd ever heard of Y2K.
Yeah, but you must have been saying to yourself, oh, God, I should be having it. This book should be out now. Look what's going to happen.
But I didn't actually sign the contract on the book until the fall of 1999. And by then it was way too late for Y2K. And I, you know, being a family man and having a family to support and a business to run, I couldn't just put everything on hold and rack up the debt until I had a contract. Now, I did get a call. Like, I talked to an agent and tried to sell him before anyone heard of Y2K, and, you know, he wasn't too interested and told me get my book, how to write a proposal and all that, and I put a lot of time in. Then I got a frantic call from him in February of 1999, and he said, hey, did you write the book? Did you get it written?
Yeah.
You know, and I think he had million-dollar signs in his
eyeballs. Oh, sure.
Can
we go to press now? We got to go to press right now.
Oh, God, if you've got it written, I can sell it for $1 million today. But it's like, no, you know, I've got a life to run and a business to run and a family to support. So I missed Y2K, and everyone's thinking, oh, boy, you really blew it, buddy. You missed Y2K. But, you know, the book needed to be written. The message needs to be out there. And it's very appropriate. And, sure, I could have made a lot on Y2K, but I probably would have been forced to cut the book and not have the book I wanted.
Well, listen, considering what's happened since, when we had this nice quiet period and the stock markets were all up and everything was rosy and we had money to, we were all arguing about how to spend the money, and now all of a sudden Y2K is becoming a reality in 2001. Listen, my friend, thank you for being here tonight.
Great. Is this the end, then?
This is the, well...
The end of tonight's show.
The end of tonight's show only. Thank you, Matthew.
I really thank you very much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Good night.
And hope to talk to you again sometime.
Good night.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
Traveling far, without a home, not without a star.
Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
You notice anything different about this? It's a slightly different version, actually. Same artist, slightly different version. And the genius of phasing, Robert Sampler, sent it to me. You're the cat, Al Stewart. It's a haunting song. Good morning, everybody. We're about to go to open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. This guy really knows how to phase. Believe me, he does it the old-fashioned way. He works. We'll be right back.
Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
Okay, we're about to enter the land of open lines. I'm still considering, I'm still thinking about the 500 volcanoes and launching all of our nukes into the 500 volcanoes. And the guy in the first hour who disappeared when his three buddies turned on the field. That almost sounds like another Madman Markham story, and we'll have to get the three friends on if he emails me at artbell@mindspring.com and get the whole story. The rest of the story, as Paul would say. First time caller line, you're on the air. Turn your radio down, please.
Is this Art Bell?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but on my radio, I hear you doing a commercial.
Well, that's because you shouldn't have your radio on, because it's 6 seconds behind.
Oh, okay, fine. I'm glad I got you.
So turn your radio off, and let me guess that you're calling from New York or New Jersey.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, well, close.
Pennsylvania.
Right.
Okay. I'll make it real short. I have found a picture of the Cydonia region from your site of last year when you first put them up.
Yes.
And I found something on that picture that shows two human forms. And I try to contact a lot of people about it, and nobody seems to be interested in it. And
you sent it to me, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. I didn't.
No?
I want to know if I sent, because I emailed your program when Mike Siegel was running it.
Yes.
I want to make sure that you get this thing, because I really believe that it depicts human beings.
I really think I've seen what you're talking about, but...
No one else has.
All right.
I went to a UFO seminar the other day.
Hold on, sir. Let's just hold it right there. Just send it to me, artbell@mindspring.com, and put in the subject line, Cydonia human, and I guarantee I'll look at it for you.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you. Your photo of you. I have a couple of photos that people say or claim they can see beings in. Now, I didn't hear human, but several people think they've seen various beings. I don't know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Art.
Hi there.
Greetings from the Mile High City in KHOW 630 AM.
Denver, that's right.
Yeah, I called you the first day you came out to Denver, I remember, a long time ago.
Oh, yes.
It was good to talk to you then, as it is now. I have two quick questions.
Sure.
Have you heard of a French inventor in Paris who has invented a car that runs on compressed air?
No.
Okay, I saw the news report on ABC News with Peter Jennings about...
Compressed air.
Yeah, about 6-9 months ago. It was before you came back.
Well, now, how do they compress the air? What method is used to compress the air?
Just like if you fill up a tire, just like a car tire. They have a unit that you can buy to have at home which fills it up overnight, or you can go to a station where for $2 they'll fill you up, and that air will get you 120 miles for $2. And they interviewed him on TV, and about 3 months after that, I saw a brief article in the Denver Rocky Mountain News about this guy. And, he speaks English. He'd probably be a good interview. And they showed him right around the car. Right now they're promoting it as a taxi or delivery van because of the limited mileage.
Well, that's pretty good, I'd say, on compressed air. It's a little hard to believe. Now, they had these rockets that you can buy, these little rockets. Remember those at home? And you pump them up with air and then put some water in as well, fill them halfway with water and pump with air, and the rocket will go way the heck up in the air. But trying to imagine that principle with just air applied to a car, you wouldn't think it would work.
Well, apparently it does. I saw the newspaper article had a drawing. It was four tanks laid side to side beneath the car.
Right.
And you would just fill it up with compressed air, and the force of the air coming out, he described it as like a bed spring. When you press the bed spring down and release it,
uh-huh,
the energy from that being released powers the car. And I have not heard hide or hair of this guy since that newspaper article at least 3 months ago.
Well, he's being tortured in one of the larger oil company basements, you know.
Where I think the Illuminati have him.
Yeah, they have racks for these kinds of people, you know. He's probably right next to the carburetor guy who just got his thumbs ripped out.
Well, except that this was on ABC News, so I know it's legitimate. I mean,
well, if you can get me some information on him, like his name, any vague way to contact him, I'll give it a try.
Okay.
All right?
Great. Can I ask one more quick question?
Oh, sure.
When you came back, one of the Denver newspapers said that you're not broadcasting out of your home anymore.
Well, one of the Denver newspapers is wrong.
Oh, okay.
I'm still in my home. I'm in the very same place. I've always done it. Why would they think that I would do anything else?
I mean, if
you could work from your house, would you give that up?
No, that's what I was thinking. I think, why is he going to a studio after he has it so cushy there, walking in the next room when he's at work?
That's right. Not a chance, sir. Not a chance this side of the moon. I appreciate your call. Denver newspaper is all wrong. No, I work at home. A lot of people, I guess, don't know that because I don't talk about it all that much, I guess. But the fact of the matter is, yes, I work from home, and I wouldn't change that for anything. I'd be out of my mind. Not a chance. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Wow, I got through.
Yes, you have. Where are you?
The beautiful Southern California mountains.
Okay.
Where we don't get hit by power outages because we're hooked up to the wind power out by Joshua Tree.
All right for you. So the hike in electric rates is not going to affect you?
Oh, yeah, it will. We're at
it. Oh, it will.
But we don't have outages for more than a few seconds.
Hmm.
By the way, my name is Tess.
Tess.
Yeah.
So in other words, when the grid goes down, because you've got those wind generators locally, they keep your portion up.
Yeah, they switch it over. So sometimes the clock stops, and if it's digital, it starts blinking.
Right.
But it's on.
Well, that beats 4 hours of off, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, most of my clocks are on batteries now.
No, I meant 4 hours without electricity altogether?
Oh, no, we haven't been out more than about 30 seconds.
Oh, no, I understand. But I say what you have beats being out for 4 hours.
Oh, 4 hours?
Oh, sure, that's happened to a lot of people.
Wow, it's not supposed to. I wanted to mention that I have heard of that air car.
Really?
Yeah, they have some demonstration models in Paris that actually work. But they are short range and slow. Maybe 30 miles an hour.
Oh. And, yeah. And they'll go how far? 100 and some odd miles?
Something like that.
Well, that's not too bad, actually. On air.
Yeah.
Your cat sounds upset.
Oh, yes, and I can't scold him. He's 20 years old and frail.
Uh-huh.
And spoiled.
And probably bad-tempered.
No, Cubby's the best. He's a baseball fan, you know.
He is.
A Cubby.
And that's hence the name Cubby.
Yes.
I've got it. Well, so you're obviously a fan of the Cubs.
Well, sort of. You have to be a fan of the Cubs.
Well,
someday they might win a game.
It sounds like you're kind of saying, Lay ball! Maybe not.
Actually, the food isn't good enough.
Right, thank you. Cubby. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, our Bill.
Yes.
This is Lorenia, Newcastle, Pennsylvania.
Well, how are you?
Just fine. I've tried all night.
You have some hum upon your telephone.
Yes, I do. And it's a regular phone. I don't know why.
Mm.
Oh, when your mom made the pool?
Yes.
Well, it reminded me back in West Virginia when I was very young, and I was born in 46, a year younger than you.
Indeed.
There was a spring house, and it was made of stones. It was about 20 feet across.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you say I'm younger?
I'm younger.
You're younger. That's right.
I mean, you're younger.
I was born in 45, yes.
Yes, uh-huh. Okay. The spring house, to keep everything cold, it was as cold as a refrigerator, and it was made of stones, big stones.
Yep.
About 20 feet across.
Right.
Maybe 20 feet tall.
Right.
Round. All it had in it was a little tiny spring that ran out through a little tiny hole at the base, and that was built underneath trees, so that may be an addition for people to build for the future if they need a refrigerator.
You're absolutely right. Certainly the pool we built was as good as a refrigerator.
Yeah.
And that's no joke. But my mom, being the Marine trooper that she was, every day she'd go out to that pool trying to lead the way for the rest of us. We refused to get anywhere near it after the first time we froze to death. But she'd lead the way. She'd get in the pool and she'd swim till her lips were blue and she was all pale and she'd come back up and say, God, that was so exhilarating. It was great. We never went.
Well, she was showing you how much she appreciated your work.
Was that? Yes, is that right?
And it's funny that I made a little pool out that got the kids around where I lived at that time in Virginia, Buena Vista, Virginia, around, and we made a pool in a little creek, but we didn't separate it out and make a cement like you did. But the littler kids, which I was one of.
God, you don't know how much work that was. It was like building the pyramid.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of work.
Over a summer.
We had the whole group. I got the whole group to working, and but the bigger kids run us out, you know.
I'm with you.
A question I wanted to ask, Art.
Yes.
I had to put the cat out about the time the gentleman called. He said something about creating a retreat.
Yes.
And he gave how far it was from his location, but I didn't catch his location.
Well, he was up in the mountains. He's up near, you were talking about my guest, right?
Uh-huh.
Up near Donner Pass.
Up near Donner Pass?
Yeah, you remember Donner Pass, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
Okay, well, that's where he is. So he's in one of the least easily protected areas, I think, of all to survive in. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Matt from Duluth, Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
I'm calling about a call you had earlier about the Russian UFO.
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
I believe I found that. I sent you a link in your email.
All right.
You can check that. It has pictures of the spacecraft in the air, the UFO, and it also has alien corpses. And it actually has a picture of a UFO that's crushed into the ground.
All of these are separate things, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's on the website. I sent you the link.
All right. Well, I'll take
now,
a look
also,
at it.
Also, I just wanted to ask if you got on IRC the weekend.
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes.
Okay, great. And I just want to give a shout-out to FNET, Channel Art Bell.
All right. Thank you very much and take care. Yes, I did get on this last week. I couldn't get any FNET servers that would work, and somebody sent me a list, and I found one that would work, and so I did get on. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Is it Art Bell?
Yes.
I was going to say, I forgot where I heard this from, but there was a show that said that, you know, the alphabet from A to Z.
What about the alphabet?
From A to Z. You know how people say, like, 1, 2, like A, B, and C?
Yes.
This guy said if instead of doing it by 1, 2, 3... You can do it by 6, 12, 18, in increments of 6.
Yes.
All the way to Z. And if you spell computer, it will equal out to 666.
Huh. Yeah, I've heard that.
I just want to let you know that.
All right. Well, that's nothing compared to what happened to our website. Not even in the same class. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hi. Turn your radio off, please.
It's off.
Thank you.
This is Steve in West Hills, California, listening to you on KFI.
Yes, Steve.
Did you hear about the meteor that crashed off of Long Beach here?
Long Beach?
Yes, it was last night.
I might have read something about that a little bit earlier.
Yeah, because they said that it was the person that reported it said that it was a mid-air collision.
That's right. Actually, I've got it right here. And they saw two objects apparently coming together, and they thought a mid-air collision. And I was wondering really hard earlier tonight how you could get from there to the Los Angeles Fire Department saying that it turned out that it was possibly some type of meteorite.
They claimed that part of the rescue team, you know, some of the Coast Guard or the fire trucks, some of those people, the fire people,
yes,
saw it in the sky before they got there, and they put two and two together and said it must have been this meteor that someone saw that was on their way to the scene.
Well, they always jump to that conclusion, though. If you've got other witnesses saying two objects came together, that it just
yeah, I know. I know. It had to have been pretty bright for them to think that in the first place.
Right,
know?
Right.
But that's not, there was those other meteors in the past year that have been seen out here. A friend of mine saw one from his balcony, those green ones.
Yes, I've seen those, yes.
You know, I thought that was interesting that something like that could happen so close to Long Beach, you know, without striking something, you know, just coincidentally happened to go in the water that large. It just seemed like it wouldn't be a small meteor to attract that much attention.
Yep.
And I had a question for you about the Mad Cow.
Yes.
Stuff. I'm from Iowa, and when I was watching it on the World News, they shipped those sheep from Vermont to Des Moines, Iowa.
But you can't say that three times fast.
And I thought that was just, it seems crazy to ship something like that, animals that are in question, because it's such a dangerous thing, all the way across the country.
I know.
To Iowa. But then they also said that 90% of the baby back ribs that we eat in the United States,
yes,
are imported.
That's correct.
I couldn't believe that. I was astounded to hear that, because all these years I thought I've been eating pork, you know, produced in America. And it's...
I am curious. You obviously sound like an aficionado. So if you can no longer eat any beef, if it were to get to that point in the U.S. where we could not eat any beef, what would you do?
I would be just as depressed as my life would be over, just as you say. I love beef. I mean, I don't know what I do. I like almost all kinds of beef, and I like barbecuing. And it would just be devastating to me not to be able to, you know, get out there and cook a nice big porterhouse with some butterfly shrimp.
It would literally destroy the quality of life in America.
It sure would. I would miss it terribly. And it's, you know, but what I think it's going to happen. I think that we're on the verge of releasing, you know, the fact that it's actually here in the United States, because that they were talking about two cases in
I know. Do you think that gorging yourself now on quarter pounders and such would help at all? I mean, really packing them in right now before they lower the boom. Probably wouldn't help, would it?
No, I don't think so. I'm going to keep eating them until I'm absolutely...
Positive
that there's danger.
Let me know when you get to the last burger.
It's been a too long time with no peace of mind.
Imagine that, the last burger.
And I'm ready for the time to get better.
I think I'll take it with fries.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
Tell you, I've been racking my brain, hoping to find a way out. I've had enough of this continual rain. Changes are coming, no doubt. It's been a too long time with no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the time.
Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2001.
It is indeed. Remember, international line, folks. Give it a shot. Check my website. And if you can't do it that way, do it any way you can and let us know how you did it. The international line, toll-free, that's really important, toll-free, is 800-893-0903. That's 800-893-0903. Give it a try. Now, somebody writes that the sheep in question went to Ames, Iowa, not Des Moines. I think that's right. But he says they're not contagious. And I'm not sure that's right at all. As a matter of fact, according to the report by Linda Moulton Howe the other night, who talked to an expert, it's going to be 2 years. 2 years before the tests are in on these sheep and before we know.
...27th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
now, isn't this interesting? The engineer at KPUA, Glenn, in Hawaii, Mountain View, Hawaii, has just sent me a fast blast saying, hey, Art, 10.085 megahertz, loud and clear in Hawaii. Note, second low signal blast halfway between the loud bursts. I'll be damned. That's the same as it was on 3.39. It's not strong enough here where I am to be hearing the second burst, although I haven't run the beam all the way around. I haven't run the log periodic all the way around. But if they're hearing this very strongly in Hawaii, then I hope somebody in Alaska will quickly check 10.085 megahertz and see how loud it is in Alaska. This is really interesting. Looks like we've got them again, folks. It's the same signal. There's no question about it. And what I just got from this engineer in Hawaii confirms that. Wouldn't surprise me a bit. Have you taken a look at the solar numbers? Could they resist toying about with the ionosphere churned up as it is right now? Oh, my. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Great. Art?
Yes.
And Spring Earth, what happened? Are you not advertising that anymore? I want to get it.
You want to get what?
Mind Spring Earthlink.
Well, you certainly can. I'm not advertising it at the moment, but that's where my account is on Mindspring.
That's, I'm going to subscribe on the 7th, but if you have a commercial that, because if you sponsor them, they'll give the second 2 months free, if I remember.
Well, that was when I had the commercial going.
Yeah.
Right? Well, they're not a present sponsor. They're not on the air with me right now, so I don't know. You can call up and mention my name and see what they do.
Yeah, well maybe they can get back with you. Would you take them if they wanted to?
Well, yeah, of course.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. You're very welcome. Yes, I've had that Mindspring account, and I continue to have it. The one thing I don't understand is if you send mail to Art Bell at Earthlink, it's not going to get to me. It goes off into the ether somewhere. But if you send it to me at my Mindspring account that they set up for me, it still gets there. Confusing. Interesting. Huh. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. Keith from Salton Sea Beach.
Yes, sir.
The reason Dave's dam won't work
is
we have a dike around this town now that's 5 foot high to keep the water out.
Yes.
Because the Salton Sea has been rising for the last 20 years.
Right.
And if Dave was going to flush in 6 foot of water, we'd all drown in a month.
Well, Dave has other concerns.
What's that?
Well, you know, big power. I mean, you heard the call, same as I did.
Well, he said that the...
I mean, you guys are just going to have to move.
That's right. We're going to have to move.
Because Dave's damn pipe is coming.
Dave's damn pipe is coming. Well, it ought to create a lot of electricity. By the way, I've been off the grid for a long time, and it's really difficult, but if you keep after it, you keep plenty of power, and if you watch how much you use.
Yes, well, that's all correct. Absolutely correct.
They can raise it 100% as far as I care.
Well, that's a pretty smug attitude, I'd say.
I know, that's an attitude. But
however,
you know,
if you've really gone off-grid, then you've earned it.
All right.
You can have that attitude. So, to Californians, you say...
That's right.
All right.
They use it, and they use it, and they abuse it.
Right.
And I know a guy that's got a fan running right now and probably is cooler.
I have a fan and a cooler running.
Well, you know...
I'm a power pig. I have no choice. You know, I've got all this equipment. I have to keep it cool in here.
Well, I can imagine with the equipment, but it's 65 degrees outside. Why not open the door, you know?
I have an
open... with the equipment,
I have an open window right now. And actually, it's 50.9 where I am outside, and I have an open window. Inside the studio, it's still almost 75 degrees, even with cooling.
Say, have they ever finished the double-lane road going up to Pahrump?
Yes.
Because the last time I was there was...
No, it is finished. With the exception of a little bit down on the Las Vegas side, it's all four lanes coming here from Las Vegas now.
Good. God, what a place to get killed.
Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. It's going to bring a lot of people out here who otherwise would not have moved to Pahrump, that big four-lane highway, because now it's reasonable to commute to Las Vegas, so... We're a big influx of people from Las Vegas and a big influx of people from California, and they're all descending on Pahrump because it's a cool place. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Turn
your radio off. That's prime. Okay. First thing you do. It's like the prime directive. Turn your radio off.
Who am I speaking with?
I beg your pardon?
Who am I speaking with?
This is Frank.
Frank?
Yes, Frank. I'm the screener before the engineer you've got to talk to get to Art.
Ah, I finally got through. Yeah, I've been listening to...
Well, I mean, it's a process. You're not all the way through yet, obviously, but...
Yes.
You are talking to me.
Yeah, I had a question for Art.
Okay, what was it?
Well, he's never talked about certain things about cigarettes. I feel like there's a lot of interesting stuff about tobacco and what information is real and what information isn't real about health risks about tobacco. I mean, obviously tobacco is harmful, but it seems like there's a lot of very intense anti-tobacco propaganda. And sometimes I wonder, you know, what forces that are out there might want us not to smoke for some strange reason.
The Masons.
The Masons?
Masons, yes.
Why would they not want us to smoke?
Well, I don't know. I think that a healthy portion of them do, but, you know, they probably want it. It's like the last hamburger. They're going to keep it all within the Masonic Brotherhood. I have no idea, sir. Actually, answer your question.
Yeah.
You want me to pass this on to Harry the Engineer?
Sure.
Okay, just a moment. Harry the Engineer.
Hello.
Hi. I was told you had something pretty good for Art.
Well, I don't know if it's any good. It's just a question that I've had that it's a topic that he's never addressed on his show in the time I've been listening.
What would that be, sir?
The question of what government or, I don't even know if it's government forces, but what kind of propaganda might exist about cigarette smoking because of some wish that we don't smoke as much.
Secret smoking, right?
What's that?
You said secret smoking.
Secret smoking, yeah.
Yeah. Mason, sir.
Ah, that's what the last guy I spoke to you said.
Yeah. You really want to take this to Art, all the way to Art?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's actually that interesting of a question. I've never heard him talk about...
material. We're going to pass it on to him then. All right?
Well, I mean, if it's an interesting enough question.
Sure. We'll pass it on. Thank you. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you tonight?
I'm all right.
I think I need to turn down my radio.
Prime Directive.
I know. That was... You're ornery.
I know.
You are.
I mean, you can take so much and then you can't take any more for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the way I get, you know, I get it off my chest that way.
It's cute. I had a dream that I have to tell you about.
Okay.
You know,
I've got to do a show on dreams soon because I've been having a lot of really weird dreams lately.
So have I. This
really
about
weird.
An earthquake.
Oh.
I was inside a building. This is weird. It was like a movie almost. I was inside a building and it was just rocking and it just got really bad. The earthquake was just huge. And then it was like a movie, it just stopped. Then all of a sudden, I'm in this, I don't know, like a, not a ship, but some kind of capsule, but we're underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird?
Where do you live?
I live in San Joaquin Valley.
That's not weird at all.
I know. I mean, I'm having this dream and I wake up and I'm like dizzy almost from the feeling the earthquake in my dream, and I know it's not real, but...
But somehow, when it occurs, you're in a capsule.
I'm in a capsule, and it's going through water. And that's the only way you can get from... In my dream, it was like the only place to get from one place to another. It was in water.
Well,
it's in this capsule inside water.
Maybe then you should consider your dream to be prophetic, and you should get a capsule... And have it nearby, kind of like the Mir escape capsule, you know?
Yeah. Huh.
When the astronauts would get really terrorized, they'd climb down into the Mir escape capsule and wait to see what would happen.
Oh, goodness. It was just a dream. I just had to call and tell you.
Okay, well, you know how to swim, right?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit. Okay.
All right. Appreciate that dream. Thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, this is Tim in Fargo.
Hi, Tim. Fargo, North Dakota, huh?
Yep. Listen on KVOX 1280.
That's it.
I just heard a report here in the news about some U.S. soldiers being exposed to sarin nerve gas.
sarin nerve gas
during the Gulf War there.
Oh yes, Well, they were. Listen, there were exposures to all kinds of things,
yeah.
And I suspect sarin.
Yeah, it
the gas
could,
detectors they were going off like crazy.
I don't know. I think it's kind of opening the door a little bit here. Government releasing that, you know, some were exposed.
Well, I wonder if the exposure was an overt act on the part of the Iraqis, or did our destruction of some of those arsenals cause that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to. What's her name? Joyce Riley?
Yes.
I'd like to hear what she has to say about
this. Well, you can bet she'll have something to say.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. I love your show.
Okay, thank you, and take care.
Night.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey, Art.
Yes.
How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, is Keith Rowland, is he originally from Palmer, Alaska?
I don't think so. Why, are the Rowlands big up there in Palmer?
Well, no, but I worked with a guy out in the Aleutian Islands that named Keith Rowland. And if it was him... And that problem with 666 down in California, I'll tell you, he could take care of it in no time. And that's
he did take care of it, sir. He is the one who took the sixes out of the servers.
Oh, well, you know, I had the same problem here yesterday.
You did?
Yeah, I did. And it wasn't exactly the same problem. But the bank sent me a statement saying because my account was delinquent, that they were going to take $6.50 out of my account, out of my savings account.
Yes.
Okay, so I was talking to my son. He gets my bank statements. I live up in the hills. Anyway, he looked at my bank statement, and it said in my savings account there was $6.66.
So you had it covered then.
Yes, and I've got another thing here. I think that the next investigation that Linda Moulton Howe should do is how widespread this lima bean loathing is.
Oh, I don't need Linda to do that. It's worldwide. Nobody could like lima beans.
But then I want to know if one of the symptoms of the lima bean loathing is maybe a sensitivity to poor audio quality.
Possibly. it certainly could be. And I certainly have that sensitivity.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for all that.
You're welcome.
And goodbye. It's definitely worldwide. Nobody could like lima beans. Lima beans are... They're nature's mistake. That's what they are. Lima beans are nature's mistake. The coarseness of them, the gushiness of them, the greenness of them, the foul taste of them, the way they slosh around in your mouth and you just know you don't even want to take another bite of it. Nature's mistake. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. Going once, going twice, gone. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Keith from Hamilton, Ontario.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to talk to you about this rash of school shootings.
Okay.
I believe the parents should be held about 60% responsible. It shows what kind of life we're in, where a parent can't acknowledge anything wrong with their own child. I mean, surely they must see some signs, or at least a sign. It would be just like my theory of wrestling. Kids are doing it in the backyards and the playgrounds, and kids are getting hurt.
How old are you?
Oh, I'm 31.
31. Do you remember when you were 15?
Yes.
Do you remember the things that were driving you when you were 15?
Yes.
I don't know. I just don't know. As adults, we sit here and we think about it, and we think we got it figured out. I'm not so sure. I'm sure some of it is the parents' problem, but not as big a percentage as I think you imagine.
Okay, or if you can remember, this is probably about my 10th time talking to you, but I discussed once to you my daily Hall of Fame bad luck. I believe you had a witch on.
Oh, Evelyn Paglini.
Yes, yes. And I talked to her about my everyday bad luck.
Yes, I do remember, yeah.
I had a lousy childhood in school, mostly before high school, and I never thought of taking my aggressions out on anyone. I mean,
you're making my point.
Yeah, but
a lot of children have had terrible, terrible childhoods and have risen up to be famous or extremely talented, or, you know, it can go one of a million different directions. I just don't know how you can pin it down to the parents.
I would find them more responsible. Again, like I say, back to that wrestling thing, I mean, kids are getting maimed everywhere. As a matter of fact, there was even a death not too long ago. I mean, they would have to be more responsible.
Yeah, but no, wait a minute now. You're talking about the death that occurred with a couple of kids that were supposedly imitating the WWF, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, that was thrown out of court so fast and was not accepted at all. I'm sure you're aware of that. If you know much about the story, then you know that.
I defend anything of what wrestling goes. It's more adult-oriented anyway.
Yeah, I know, but that defense was tossed right out on its ear. So
the children are learning it from something, and I think that parents should be a better role model for their own parents.
Well, so do I. I don't disagree with you. I just don't think that that's it. Maybe that's a portion or a part of it. But there's too many other things at work here. It's pretty much society-wide and pretty much totally scattered. I don't know. It's kids from fine homes who are given almost everything, and it's kids who have had really bad luck and a bad life and or been tortured at school, whatever. And then it's the normal kids, too, so I don't know. I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, this is John in Texas.
Hi, John.
I do know what your mystery signal is.
What do you think it is?
It's Advanced Narrowband Digital Voice Terminal. It's a radio encryption sequence used by the military.
Is it now?
Yeah.
Well, why would it appear on the exact same frequency that they have listed for HAARP?
Well, the one frequency you were listing earlier, the
3.39.
Yeah, that's also allocated to FEMA. And FEMA is one of the agencies that uses that ANDVT.
Every time we find it, it disappears. Now, why would they care? If it's so encrypted, why would calling attention to it cause them to move?
Why would they move?
Yes.
I don't know what you mean.
In other words, when we found it previously, we talked about it widely on this program, and it disappeared. Poof.
Well, it's not used constantly. I mean, it's used only to transmit their voice or to transmit data.
How do you know this to be true?
Well, that signal you're playing, you can find it on the Internet. There's several places that have it recorded.
I'm sure that's right. Yes,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes, indeed.
If you go to any search engine, you just type in ANDVT.
Okay, I'm going to do that. ANDVT?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to do exactly that and see what I come up with. Thank you. In the meantime, I've never heard anything like it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello. Hey, I got a quick little joke to wrap up the night.
All right.
I heard you bemoaning the leadership of the solar energy question earlier.
Yes, and everybody takes that to mean that I'm bashing George Bush.
Oh, no, I agree with you. But you know, here's something about our new fearless leader we have in the White House. I heard a good comedian joke about him. He said he likes to brag about he works out 30 to 60 minutes a day with weights now. He says it really clears his head. Then the comedian said, "Don't you think he's been working out a little bit too much lately?" I would certainly agree.
Ah, cute, sir. Very cute. Very cute. I appreciate the call, and
okay.
I guess I'm going to take that as the final joke of the evening. You have a good night.
You too.
All right, take care. I don't know enough about George Bush yet to be bashing him, so I'm not really doing that. It would be any president who would be in the White House right now as we face a power crisis. I think it is horrendous. Along with, in other words, what they're doing is fine. Look to the oil and the coal, because in the short term we're absolutely going to need it. But at the same time, they should be saying, look, our job as a leader of this country is to look at what we're going to be using 10 or 20 or 30 years from now. Therefore, let us begin now with solar and wind and other ways. That's what I haven't heard yet. Ta-ta.